This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff.
Liftoff.
All right, ready to hit orbital velocity. This is Weekend Confirmed. I'm Garnet Lee, very glad to be here. I have an awesome show lined up for you, and we will rock right into it.
What kind of rock?
Cherub Rock.
Nice.
I don't know. Is that a good one?
Yeah. It's a good album. I enjoyed.
Yes!
Arguably their last good one.
No, I think you just take arguably out of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the two Jeffs. They're here. Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Yo.
And Jeff Mattis there at the other end.
Howdy, partners.
And special guest here from Blendo Games, Blendo Games founder, creator of fantastic indie games. And I actually can say that because I like his games. That's not paid. He did not pay me $100. It's not a $100 bill on here in front of me. It's Brendan Chung here. Hey, everybody.
Welcome.
Hooray.
First timer.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
He actually listens to the show, so I think that he doesn't really even have a game he's really jocking, so he's just
probably
like hang out and talk about games.
Won't run screaming from the studio in all likelihood.
Like all those other people that we brought in. That was an awesome
That only
week.
Happened with Mitch Gittleman that one time, okay? You guys are way blowing this out of proportion.
It's awesome that you're here, though, really, honestly.
Sincerely. Cool.
We love your games, and we love when game designers are on because it gives us such a different perspective on, I think, the industry. So, and any developer is even more interesting.
No, definitely. And here I thought you forgot your knee pads.
Yikes. What? I can't welcome the dude? Seriously?
If that's how you welcome him, I can't wait to see what happens when you get to know him.
Just wait to the end. It will be happy. Everyone will be happy at the end.
Okay, so be honest. How many of those games have you played?
Very few, to be honest.
Okay, so which ones have you played?
My brain doesn't work.
The Zibidibidoo.
The one that was the most recent one.
Zapdy Boo?
35 to Loving.
No, not the most recent one.
Adam Zombie Smasher.
What's that?
Adam Zombie Smasher.
Adam Zombie Smasher,
there
yes.
you go.
Pardon me for being an ass. You put me on the spot, my brain doesn't work. That's
dude,
why
it's fine.
If you've ever watched a TRS quiz show episode, you've seen me not be able to come up with things on the spot.
I just think it's cute
but
that you're blushing.
I played Adam Zombie Smasher.
Well, I'm very much start.
Embarrassed that I couldn't think of the guy's game list, any of them.
So prior to that, he did
Flotilla. Is also bomb.
I did not play.
So have you played Flotilla?
Yeah, really good, really good. It's turn-based strategy in space, basically. Really elegant looking, very cool. You're operating in a three-dimensional space, so it's kind of got a homeworldy kind of thing, except it's turn-based.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So here's where I apologize, because I've only played Atom Zombie Smasher, but I loved Atom Zombie Smasher and got really addicted to it. But as those who you know from listening to the show probably, that it was like a year after seeing, so Brendan won the one of the awards at DICE years ago for the Indie Games Challenge, which they cut out this year, which I think is really a bummer.
Oh my god, that's a damn shame.
They're kind of like, well, I think really what happened was, you remember that thing was sponsored by GameStop?
Mm-hmm.
I think that GameStop wasn't down with, I think really like GameStop was like, oh, we'll sponsor these indie games and we'll make lots of money somehow selling indie games or something. And that didn't really come to fruition. They're like, we're not sponsoring those awards anymore.
They're like, well,
I mean, I know that's really cynical as shit to say, but like, I don't understand, because otherwise it was really cool. Anyway, so, you know, I was hanging out with Sessler there a lot and he was like, oh, you got to meet Brendan because it was really cool. That's also where like Symphony was Monaco was there. It was like, that was a great, man, that was a bumper year. It was a really good year. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. I got addicted to Atom Zombie Smasher, and I still love that game. And I never played Flotilla, and I think I would like Flotilla because I loved Homeworld, and I've watched like a ton of videos of it. And I think by now I probably watched enough videos of the game. It's like, why the hell did you just not play the game, dumbass?
It's real good.
It's dirt cheap too.
Yes, also a bonus. Yeah.
So Refinements. By the way, thanks for the real feedback on the format chains. We've got some, we got some refinements coming. Number one, I'm just going to go right into my segments. So it's not going to be weird, like, you know, like who's figuring out what the hell we're doing. We're also going to try and open it
Thank
up.
Thank God it hasn't been weird yet.
I'm never weird.
I'm so glad about that.
I'm never weird.
Well, you know, I'm still recovering from putting my foot in my mouth pretty big.
No, so that was.
I feel bad. I'm sorry, Brand. I apologize for
this
not being able to think
start
of your
to
games.
The show.
I know. I fucked it up already.
I know. That's my gift.
God
I just
damn it. Anyway, go ahead.
But your Niners didn't fuck it up. There, now you can feel better.
Nah.
What?
Don't placate me. What? Go ahead. So you are starting it off with your segment. And it was the first week of doing
but
that.
Baby,
that
I
format.
Love you. Why can't I placate you?
Talk to me later.
Oh, okay. So really, we just got off on a bad foot because now I'm going to talk about DMC and that's just going to incite all kinds of negative reaction.
Why? Because you didn't like it?
See, you are now, he's doing it to me, what I did to him. Remember this conversation?
I'm asking you.
Remember when we were sitting outside talking about the show, and I said, remember, because as soon as I say that I didn't love it, everyone's like, oh, you don't like it?
Well, so you didn't, you started saying, well, we're going to start off on a bad foot by talking about DMC.
Right, because everyone's
so
upset about it. It's really weird how defensive people have become about DMC.
About anything.
No, that's not weird. That's the internet.
Okay.
I'm just surprised the DMC was able to latch on to that so strongly because it seems like the way the internet rolls, you would have thought that the old school Devil May Cry Dante fans being pissed off that this isn't the same game would have gathered momentum. But instead, it's been this is a new thing and it's awesome and we love it. And why don't you old people who like that stuff shut the fuck up?
Hmm.
I'm just kind of surprised by that. I don't know.
Well, let's get to what you like. What you dislike is not the stuff that's changed, is it?
Yeah, no. So here's the thing about DMC.
Clearly, Dante has grown and matured as a character since. Oh, maybe not.
Here's the thing: is that right off the bat, anytime someone, especially who's a gamer, says and starts to talk about DMC, and it's not immediately, "Oh, I love the new DMC," then everybody presumes, "Oh, you must hate it because you don't like the fact that they changed Dante." And actually, I'm not really that upset that they changed Dante. I was upset that they changed Dante, but after looking at this game and considering some about where they went with it, I don't really think that it's that big a deal that they tried to re-envision Dante. As a matter of fact, if we're being honest and we go back and look at like Devil May Cry 4, it really begged the question, like, did there need to even be a Devil May Cry 5? You know, Devil May Cry 4 was a game that was fun and had, you know, the Devil May Cry spirit in it to a degree, but it was also a game that you played through once and then went back through and played through the exact same spaces with a new character as completely recycled content and then get to the end and it's just a parade of all the bosses that you'd already played to get to the end of the game. So it wasn't like there was a tremendous amount of fresh creative energy in the Devil May Cry fuel tank to keep going after that. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? Coming in with something new, trying to say, hey, we're going to do something new with this, and that still has, you know, a new embodiment of the Devil May Cry spirit, that's awesome. And, you know, since J.J. Abrams is in the news right now, might be directing Star Wars.
He is.
Might be.
I think they confirmed it.
But they did. Okay, so he's going to be directing Star Wars. I think you don't have to look any further than how amazingly revitalized Star Trek was with just one movie that, mm-hmm. like, that still paid homage to all of the characters and their types and their personas, but yet really new take, right? Very new, fresh, young take, like very, like, I just, we know about Star Trek. And I was expecting maybe something like that in DMC. And I think that where DMC went wrong is that it doesn't feel like anything special. It doesn't have anything that elevates it above action game with hero. It's not, there's not, like the new Dante, he's fine. But that's the problem is, he's just fine. He's just fine. No, he's not, no, he ain't fine.
Hey.
Girl, he is not fine at all.
So,
he's just fine. He's like, well, it's like he's a character with,
like, what,
you know.
What does that matter if the game's fun? What does it matter what he looks like, really?
The game is fun. Okay, so to get to that point, the game is fun. The thing about the game is fun within the context of an action game if there was not the name Devil May Cry on it. So the bottom
there
line
isn't.
Is...
It's just three letters.
Well, at some point in time, you have to say, where's that dividing line of why we're even bothering to call this Devil May Cry, right? And so You could say, and I think that for different people, it sits at different places. So for some folks, the fact that it is the Devil May Cry world, which the narrative is not any better in this than it's been in the other ones, has never been a great story-based game. So that's not a huge
but
knock.
It's more of a venue than a story. It's more of a the idea of demons and gods.
And Nephilim, yeah. Nephilim taking on demons.
Right.
And yes,
that's a cool concept around which games are interesting.
It's a relatively
made.
Cool concept. The story in this game is still as bad as it's been in other games. Maybe here's the funny thing about it is one of the things that Ninja Theory does exceedingly well, I think, is their presentation of story beats. So, you know, they really have become masters of understanding how to stage a scene from the idea of, you know, where do you position cameras? How do you show the characters who are interacting with each other? They have great script writing and voice acting, not because the story or the things they're saying is great, but just the dialogue works really well. It feels right when they're doing the narrative pieces. It feels right. It feels good. And the characters are kind of cool, but Dante's not all that cool. He's just,
you keep talking about it in terms of this sort of grand themes and idea behind the game, but it's really, I feel like that whole franchise is more about, look at the rad combos I can do. And
So therein lies really the core of my complaint with the game. The core of my complaint with the game is that the action in this Devil May Cry has become really loosey-goosey. And as people have noted that, you know, it offers you three difficulty levels to start with, and there's two more that unlock after that. I haven't played the unlockable difficulties. But even Nephilim, which is the hardest of the three that it offers right off the bat, isn't... The way they make it hard doesn't force you to go in and master the combos and play a la Ninja Gaiden or old Devil May Cries. It really is just a matter of how quickly can you string together using different attacks. This game is very much a dial-a-combo game. This is very much a game of like pull right trigger, press YYB. Oh, let go of the right trigger, pull the left trigger, press YYB, press BY, press forward, jump BY, you know, tap the D-pad so you equip different weapons. You also have, like, it gets bewildering. By the end of the game, you have... I guess bewildering is an overstatement. It's a little they overindulge in giving you different weapons to choose from, as opposed to making any of the weapons develop beyond a certain level and be more interesting. All of them have the same basic attacks, like forward, forward, Y, and Y, pause, Y, or and then it's just a matter of leveling up the strength of those attacks. Mm-hmm. So the difference then becomes, oh, if I'm going to use my hell-based weapons or demon-based weapons, do I use the fists or do I use the giant axe? And the giant axe, which is one of the weapons you get early on in the game, is almost a game breaker. I feel like it's not really well balanced into the game because it's so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so the detriment of all of this is that the game becomes very much, yeah, it's cool to run around and look like a badass, and you can do that very quickly. But I think that the feeling of reward of making a awesome fight stand by chaining together a bunch of combos and doing a bunch of attacks is lessened to a degree when you don't feel like you had to do anything special other than alternate around the keys and pull triggers and press buttons at different times. As opposed to, oh, you know what? Right now, I had to use this attack against this enemy in order to be successful. And there's a little bit of that in there, but it feels very, very easy to like get into a big room with a bunch to do and just wail through it. Which I guess is what they were going for. I mean,
yeah. Hey, Brendan, are you a Devil May Cry guy? Are you a fan?
I am not really. The last game I played in that kind of genre, I guess, was like God of War 2. So I'm a little bit out of date in this one.
I think God of War 2, actually, God of War games, they hit on this formula really well. God of War did a really good job at this game. Well, and God of War, actually, you started to learn those.
The weapon upgrade stuff is really good. I mean, it's basic, but it's like, you know, you are making progress through the whole thing. I don't know. I guess the question that I have about, excuse me, about Devil May Cry, it sounds sort of like it's basically, to sort of sum up what you're saying, it's eschewing the skill-based, like, I don't know, tropes of the past game where you were basically locking onto dudes and doing very specific moves and instead it's more of a button masher sort of mentality.
From what I've played just at trade shows, which is my only experience with DMC so far, they did a lot of things to force you into either what, like angel stance or demon stance or whatever it is, the different. And so it's almost like Ikaruga or what was that game that came out? Again, I'm not doing well with names. That XBLA game with the red and
Outland.
Blue. Outland, where it's like you have to be in one stance to do damage to one kind, and so you're switching back and forth because you constantly. Like, I remember there's a disco level that I played.
And the floor changes color.
Floor changes color, and you have to be in a certain thing. No?
It's really not that special. I think that they could have done so much more interesting by building more varied combos with fewer weapons. I feel like one of the things that is signature to a Devil May Cry that I would have loved to have seen carried forward would be the use of the guns. So I think one of the most fun things to do in the game are juggles that include firearm juggles,
right.
You know, like taking out your pistols and, you know, keeping someone air juggled by firing at them. And the pistols are really weak in this game, and there's not much upgrade chart to them. And the replacement weapon you get for them is a shotgun, which is useful for crowd control, but not really figuring into the air juggle system that much. So it sort of lost some of that. And I think throughout the game, this has gone south. I really have not done a good job of articulating my position, but I think that the thing about Devil May Cry is that it's a fun game, and it's a fun game that has the DMC name slapped on it and pulled a few pieces, but doesn't have the spirit of DMC in it. And that's a shame, and doesn't even have really a spirit in it. The enemy designs are just, they're so throwaway. Like literally there are giant porcupine rats. Like these are a thing you fight. Some of the demon monsters you fight are just giant trolls. There's not like there's some massive creative spark to them. It's like someone just sort of riffed off, hey, what if we had a rat with some porcupine pines on quills on it? Okay, that's cool. Let's do that. All right. Like one of the things they do to bring the guns in, so you actually have to, like, the guns are so out of the game that one of the enemies that you must use the guns against are these weird, like, swirling discs of, like, confetti, like yellow and red confetti that's like demonic energy that will come attack you, and the only way to attack the demonic energy is your gun. So every so often you'll be in a level and you see one of these giant swirling vertical discs, and you've got to just pull out your guns and shoot it real quick to make it dissipate.
It's why, like, is that all of that
there's nothing
sounds,
creative to it. It's just,
well,
sort of
all of
like,
that sounds,
oh,
like,
oh,
an
okay.
antidote to what Jeff was saying, which is it's just a button masher. Like it seems like all of this stuff is to force you into using specific things at specific times. And
but you can mash through that very easily. Mm-hmm. You can really mash through it very easily. Like very quickly, you learn that with either your demon or your angel weapons, when you press X, you have a grapple move. It either pulls you to the enemy or the enemy to you.
Right.
And that becomes like the new mode of quick locomotion,
right,
through your combo chains,
right,
which is cool. I mean, that part's pretty cool, right? And then you would think, well, then what do I do going on top of that? And then going on top of that, it's back to like there's just these simplistic moves. So simplified moves, little bit too loose combat, enemies that are just completely forgettable. I mean, there's just really nothing significantly interesting about them, like generic demon wraith looking things with shields. And yes, sometimes they're red, so you pull the right trigger, and sometimes they're blue, so you pull the left trigger. But that's really not, it's not giving me any real great sense of like, oh, I feel accomplishment from having done this, you know? The only time it's like when it's at its best is the same time at Devil May Cry. It's always been its best when you're in, you know, like a room full of a bunch of different enemies to attack. There's some flying enemies and there's some ground-based enemies. There's some heavies and you got to bounce around and deal with them. But the combo system and the game system is just loose enough that it feels like I could easily power through them. Again, simply just dialing combos into it, as opposed to really needing to like fixate on, okay, I got to like, you know, I'm not saying every game has to be Ninja Gaiden, and I think that the thing that Devil May Cry did when it was really successful was it struck a balance that was just below Ninja Gaiden on that curve of being able to pick it up and play with the controller versus needing to sit down and master, you know, go into combo lists and master, you know, long strings of combos.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they didn't get that piece. I feel like they didn't get the spirit piece. And then the other side is, like I said, it's a fun game. It's still a fun game.
Well, I think what you were saying about why did they, you know, put the DMC label on this as opposed to just release it as a new franchise, and maybe that's why they did it is I mean, I'm sure they didn't, you know, title it afterwards and stuff, but I mean to say we're going to make a Devil May Cry property and we have this action engine that we're going to do is I don't know, that you can sell titles that way. I mean, there's a legacy audience there, right? It's
yeah.
And
no, I agree.
Reinventing the wheel is not necessarily, I mean, you may reinvent the presentation and stuff, and you may make it more accessible, which I'm sure is what they would say that they were trying to do, but it doesn't sound like it worked.
And I think it's ugly. I mean, it's Unreal Engine, but I just...
Well, there's a lot of filter effects happening and a lot of strange... sort of psychedelic stuff going on in level to level. It looks
well.
Really
so one of the
different.
Cool parts of the game is that the game takes place in, you know, a near future sort of world, and then you get pulled into Limbo that overlays the existing landscape. That mm-hmm. that part is that's pretty dope. I like that.
And
a
it's
lot.
Always it cha- and not always, but it's often changing as you're going through the level.
Yeah.
Or stuff is
and that part's really cool. And then
whole sections of the level. Are
but at other times,
looting.
I swear there were entire sections of levels that I felt like I was on the Gears of War backlot. You know, and that's not. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, like, I just think that, you know, it's very competent and it's fun and there are a number of things that work in it, but it does not live up to where I think it could have been. And I think it could have gotten there. I mean, I don't know. Unreal Engine 3, though, I appreciate why you would use an engine. I'm not sure, though, that everything, just because you can do it in Unreal Engine, should be done in Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times where it just, like, that sort of Gears of War, heavy enemy with, like, snot running over the outside of them look just doesn't completely work for everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think that if you go and compare this to a Bayonetta, so Ariel played Bayonetta all the way through, and I watched her play that game, and I'm interested to play that game one day when I have time, and I felt like it looked prettier. I felt like it looked, and you know, interestingly enough, it's basically probably MT Framework, because that's a bunch of guys from Capcom, mm-hmm. and we were at Platinum and made that game, right? And I just think, though, still that game animated better. I think that the character designs were more interesting and more intricate. I think one of the things that really falls off here is that, you know, you're looking at these characters and the enemy designs, and there's not much low level or high level detail to them, right? It's like they have interesting costuming, but there's not that next final layer. It's like they could use one more pass of creative, you know, one more pass of someone coming along and going, well, so why does this monster have a chain around his neck, and what's it connected to, now, and how
there,
does that look?
Is there any cohesiveness throughout? Like, you know, so Bayonetta, for example, has all these themed enemies around. You know, they're all even named after certain verses of scripture or whatever when they first appeared. Is there any sort of through line for the enemies?
Yeah, there's some names. So there are some named enemies, and then there's also some progression to them of this is like this other enemy you fought, but it's a little more badass, and this one's like this other enemy you fought, but it's a little more badass. So it's like maybe the flying enemy with shield that's color-coded.
So it's more like the design feels sort of uninspired more so than they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been some crazy positive reviews of this game, though.
I know. I fully respect everyone to have their opinion about it. I think that maybe... I think that one thing that the high reviews reflect is the one question I want to build on is, like, what's the future for these action games? And I think that the high reviews for DMC shows that there's a lot of pent-up demand. Like, there's a lot of people who are really looking forward to this sort of game because it's fun. It is fun. It's like, it's fun to get in there, and it's like, it's not, you know... It's not like some dreary, you know, sand-colored militaristic shooter. It's not. On the other hand, it's not Mario hopping around sunshiny worlds. It's like, but it still has this very game feel. It has a really high sense of reward to, you know, their playtime that's spent with it. You know, you're playing it. It's very exciting, mm-hmm. especially when you get into those big matches and you have those good combos. And I think that honestly could bode really well for the future of this generation. I mean, sorry, this future of this genre as we go into a new generation, because being able to do better animations, being able to do more and smoother animation is what this game type really yearns for.
So do you think that maybe like Devil May Cry might be just being overburdened by the fact that this is what, the seventh or eighth installment of the series?
Fifth, but yeah. Fifth. Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's definitely why they tried to reboot it. You know, that's okay. Definitely what they were going for in rebooting. Oh, another thing is that the dodge, so there's no lock-on, which is fine. I mean, I don't like the no lock-on because I think that in the kind of chaotic fights that this spurns, you need that. They also put camera control on you. There's no attempt to... It makes you really respect. Every time you've ever... I mean, I've known this before. Every time I've ever, though, played a third-person game that had a controlled camera where the, you know, the, the designer put the time to control the camera. I've always thought to myself, man, they must really put a lot of work in these cameras, and I've heard that before. And then you play a game like this where there's no camera control and you're having to control it all yourself, and you're like, man, it is really nice to have an assisted camera, the one that works. And then the other thing is, like, they put clipping control into the camera. So by that I mean that when you come up next to a wall and the camera would swing behind you because you're trying to move it, if it hits a clipping surface so the camera can't go through a wall, then you lose control of the camera. So you'll be trying to fight sometimes in confined spaces and you've gotten accustomed to moving the camera, but now you can't move the camera, so you're suddenly moving the wrong direction. That's annoying. And then the dodge system is their animation system doesn't allow you to bust out of many of the attack animations, many especially the higher level ones, and dodge. So you oftentimes will get caught in attack routines where you'll be like, oh shit, now I see this enemy that I know his attack routine and he's launched his. I want to dodge out of it, but you can't dodge out of it because you can't break the animation that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I had the pleasure of working on a third-person camera for a third-person action game. And I feel sorry for anyone who has to work on this.
More affirmation of that. Yeah.
It is impossible to make a good. Well, it's an incredibly difficult problem. I've yet to see a game that completely nails that one aspect of the camera of third-person action game.
What was your role in? You were just trying to construct that system.
So at Pandemic, I was a level designer, but then I also later got responsibilities of doing camera systems and multiplayer design.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a programmer to kind of work out how the camera system worked. And you just end up with all these bizarre situations where the camera ends up in some corners, ends up clipping some wall, and it's just...
Were you trying to have a user-controlled camera or...
Yes. Yeah. And that's why I totally love what God of War did, where it's just like, let's just not have that problem at all. Let's just... have the designer just place cameras manually everywhere to get.
Did the level designers work with, or did they just design the level and go, okay, figure out how to put cameras in here? Was there ever like, hey, maybe we could do this because the geometry here is making it really hard to, look at this area? Or was it just did they pass it off to you and just say, run with it?
Right. I mean, ideally, the camera should be robust if it's like a user controlled thing. It shouldn't be just robust enough to just handle whatever you throw at it. Mm-hmm. But that's a pretty big task to ask for, I think.
Yeah. So you'd be like, you get stuck in a corner. What does the camera do? You know.
Right. Does it like move out of the way? Does the thing turn invisible? What do you do? It's like a...
So fascinating to me that.
And how do you make it feel right? Like, do you pin the camera on the back of the player character? Is it a hard pin? Does it have any bob? Does it show any sort of motion? Does it have any inertia to it?
Right. It's so easy for us to be like, a camera in this game sucked. There's some, like three dudes in a room going, we tried so hard. It's not easy.
All right, so as I'm wrapping up DMC, lest you think that I didn't want to go off too far on the negative, and I didn't want to go too far on the positive because my final take, I went both ways. My take on the game is that it's fun. I'm finished the game and it's fun. Yeah. I'm trying very hard not to cloud my judgment with what Devil May Cry was, because that doesn't really upset me that much now that I played it. I think that there were some cool ideas. I think there are some cool ideas. I think that they've given DMC a place to potentially build from. To be honest, I think it would be cool to take this character a little further, flesh him out some more, do some more, development around giving him more identity and personality. As Ariel pointed out to me, she's like, "What? You think the old old Dante had personality? He had a coat."
Yeah, hey, that coat had personality though. It's a red motherfucker.
Yeah, it was the coat of personality.
Coat of personality.
Yeah,
you like that one.
You're no Vernon Reed. Actually, he was the guitar player. Anyway, so we'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will. Jeff's going to take off. He's going to talk about some Nintendo stuff. I want to talk about that because we had the big Nintendo Direct conference, and talk about reimagining things. They are digging in on Zelda, reimagining how we're rethinking everything about Zelda.
How many Zeldas you want? We got two Zeldas.
Co-op Zelda.
Yeah,
non-linear progression in Zelda. I'm completely unsure about that. So all of that and more to come. So stick around. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to this. You want to play all the latest video games? Well, try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Number one! Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95. That's $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC, Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up,
Select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, and there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. It's just $5.95 to start! Did I mention that's their lowest price ever? Simply sign up, pick your games, and Gamefly will rush them to your door. Go to Gamefly.com, that's GameFly.com, and sign up today. So happy that's the constant read that we're going with. All right, so as Garnet implied before we went to break, big Nintendo's is...
I just said I didn't imply anything.
Oh, you did say it. But you insinuated stuff, and there was some flirtation.
Oh, you two and your semantics.
Yeah, big Nintendo announcements coming moving forward, especially where it regards the Wii U. And, you know, if I were to say to you guys, hey, name the four franchises that the Wii U is working on, you would be like...
Zelda, Mario, Metroid...
Mario Kart? Mario,
well, that's... okay.
I would say, Mario Kart, and probably some sort of party game.
Yeah.
And you would be right, except for Metroid.
So why did you take 36 minutes to explain that?
Yeah. So that's good. That's all well and good, in my opinion. I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, yes, we want all those updates to all those titles, but I don't know. I'm more excited about the Xenoblade-looking trailer that was shown, because that looks rad, and finally Xenoblade's in the H-Dizzles. Which I won. You know, I'm sorry. As much as that game got really great comments and reviews, I don't want to play things that are in standard def anymore.
I don't think you would have played a 100-hour Japanese role-playing game, personally.
You're probably right.
Despite the fact that you can play Terra ad nauseum, I don't
think... And it's very Asian.
You're going to play Ni No Kuni, though, right?
You know what?
Because you're...
As excited as I was about it, I started reading what people wrote, and I'm like... I don't know if I want to put myself through that.
Oh, there's that part where I have to go out and grind.
And there's the enemy. Like, I was reading all of Phil Kohler's tweets about it, and I was like, so excited about that game. And then he was like, yeah, there's the part where they have like instant kill attacks, and you have to, like, you know.
And Phil loved it.
He gave it a low-ish score Polygon. Yeah. I wanted to say Pulse. That's not right. Polygon. I'm not doing good with anything today. It's probably all the hits to the head I've suffered this week. Anywho, we're talking about Nintendo. Zeldas. We should talk about Zeldas.
Well, wait, I would love to say more about Xenosaga team making that game. I thought that game looked
fantastic. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it looks a lot like Terra, actually.
Well, it looks a lot like Xenoblade Chronicles, and they showed the big X in the logo, so they're clearly going to play on that same fantasy. They had a cool part where the character went up and got into a battle frame.
Oh my god, that was so rad!
Really awesome. The only thing is that the only hesitation I have now is that as they move into the HD space, how much can they learn from... I don't want the game to become westernized at the same time, as beautiful as that game looks. I would love to see them tone down a little bit the very Japanese elements, like numbers pouring off of the characters that are quite so large.
I like that. It's not necessarily a Japanese element.
It's a Borderlands element.
Yeah, well, Borderlands, Call of Duty.
It is a Borderlands element. And it's
multiplayer.
Not quite as big. Like, there was a couple of those screens where the numbers pouring off of dudes were like huge and filling the screen. I want to see the guys.
I think that's cool.
Okay. Well, that's just me.
Max Payne did it, too. Max Payne 3 had a mode like that.
Right.
Does it?
Yeah, where you can do arcade mode, like go through levels that way.
That by far was the coolest.
I love the promise
that
of that.
Showed.
But that, you know what? That's Monolith Soft, and the size of that game is going to be like, that's another one of those games that it's going to be a while.
That's the problem with this entire reveal, is everything of substance is going to be a while. And like, Nintendo, you're putting out a new console. Like, can we get started on stuff a little sooner, please?
Yeah, what's the half-life on hype? You know, like, how long can you keep people?
I mean, they're literally giving us a Zelda in the interim. I mean, it reminded me a lot of of the wait for Skyward Sword, where it's like, well, we'll give you a Wii version of the last one. I don't know.
Wind Waker.
No, last time.
Oh, last time. Ocarina.
Shadow fucking one. The wolf.
Twilight Princess.
Thank you. I'm leaving. My brain doesn't work. I'm out of here.
Well, they just rolled the version of that over to Wii.
Exactly. It was a interim Zelda. It was, yes, the next big Zelda, but it was not made for the platform that it was released on.
But it's not like they went back to go back to the library. They went back to Ocarina and made that for 3DS.
Right. So, I'm just saying that the big new hardware is coming out. Yeah. I want to see the big new Zelda on the big new hardware. So what are they giving us? Well, that ain't coming for a fucking long time. You got years to wait, bros. So guess what? We'll give you a holdover Zelda, which I loved Wind Waker.
So you interpreted that the same way I did.
I don't think there's any other way to interpret it.
No, you said years plural.
Oh yeah, it ain't 2014.
I don't think so either.
That's 2015.
Yeah.
Well, that's Nintendo's MO though, right? This is not a new thing for them.
No.
Like teasing something way before, like long enough before it comes out that you can actually forget about it.
Yeah.
And then get re-excited about it again and forget about it and get re-excited and then it comes out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just reading between the lines of the way that the language was there, that it's going to be a while. Like if Nintendo tells you it's going to be a long time, you're like, oh shit, that's like
will I even be alive?
That's like geologically a long time. Yeah. We might be in another era.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled about the Wind Waker news because yeah. I love that game. That's one of my favorite Zeldas,
divided the audience.
It did divide the audience. I read a really funny cartoon somebody posted on Twitter. It's like, you know, 2000, whatever it was when Wind Waker was announced.
10 years ago.
All these people are, you know, it shows like a group of people and they're like, what have they done to Zelda? They fucked it up. It's cartoony. It's childish. It's lame. And then it's like now the announcement. And it's the same group of people going, thank God they're bringing back one of the coolest Zeldas. It's so beautiful and amazing. It's like, yeah, yeah, take a look at what we...
People are fickle.
He said. But yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled and it looks gorgeous and I think it's going to be awesome. But... is that a system seller? I mean, I guess there are a group of people that never played that game and are excited about a new Zelda. I think
it's a system reinforcer.
It may be, but I'm very excited to play it. But I don't think just the fact that it is a remake puts it in a category that isn't like, oh, I must have this for my new system.
No. It's more like I bought a Wii U now and I've, you know, ripped through the three or four games that I think are interesting and what am I going to play?
Yeah.
Well, let's, you know, if you're going to remake something, at least, you know, or HDify something, at least do something that's really long so it gives people something to play for a minute and while you're working on your other stuff.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the interesting part of the Zelda stuff is what you teased before the break is we're going back to the drawing board on the new Zelda. And I really think this is part of what I was talking about. I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back. I think it's pretty obvious seeing the hardware, but when we were making our sort of predictions at the end of last year, I really think the push for Nintendo with this hardware is co-op, is playing with people on their own screen and doing what they're you know, that asynchronous or not.
Yeah.
You know, asymmetric co-op. And I think you're going to see it in Zelda and you're going to see it in Mario and you're going to see it in a lot of their titles. I think Mario Kart is a perfect example of something that'll work really well that way. But I think all of their games going forward, all their big first party titles, that's what's going to be reinforced. And it'll be really interesting to see how they do it with Zelda. I hope it's not a Tinkle type situation or Tingle or whatever the fuck his name was.
Will it finally get a jump button? That's a big innovation.
Yeah. You know, I think that could be a really neat thing to bring to Zelda and the non-linear sort of more open worldy.
Yeah, so what's your take on that? I'm not keen on that.
Well, you think that the Zelda template is get my new thing so I can get to my new area to get my new thing to get to my new area, and that's what Zelda is?
And I think that that's part of the joys of playing the game is that discovery of your next item and the next thing that you're going to do with it, and then it has that very rewarding progression of getting something, learning how to really be great with it, and then do more with it, and then here's the culmination of that. Now you've completed that master dungeon. Now you're on to the next level, and that's what Darksiders. I mean, that's Darksiders looked at that exact blueprint, and that's why we liked it. And you know, that's always why I felt funny. I'm like, why are people dissing Darksiders for picking up on how nice that progression feels?
The one criticism of that, I agree with you actually, but the one criticism of that progression that has always resonated with me is the idea that the end of Zelda, the last bit of the game, is where you're the coolest, which is, I guess, how it should be, but you don't get to be the coolest very long. Like you amassed all this great shit and you don't get to use it, all of it, very long.
Dude, you are fucking channeling John Davison right now.
Oh, is that what he was? Maybe that's where I got it from.
He was always like that about these sort of. But we had that. Just he had that theory in general about game design that you know, the empowerment of playing a game in projecting yourself into fiction is how much stuff you can do, all this cool, fantastical things that you can do, and how, you know, even if you looked at the metrics of how people played games, there's so few people who got, you know, even halfway through games to see so much of that content, which is why developers, we felt at the time, were shifting content further and further forward into games so that you'd be able to have that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but DMC, like we were just talking about DMC does that. And that's actually one of the parts, although I don't like how many weapons they put in there. It's cool that you like have something new to play with.
Yeah.
I think that's part of Zelda. I mean, not everything has to be Skyrim.
I agree. And I also think what it really means is there's going to be a shit ton of backtracking in Zelda.
Well, okay, so that's a good question, though. Like as blasphemous as it may sound to Zelda purists, like, what would be the thing that you guys would change about, like, a Zelda trope that you would be like, okay, look, this, as much as I appreciate this as part of the canon, I want to, there's a better way to do this.
You know,
voice acting.
Sorry. Oh, voices. As much as I love, like, the Zelda games, I'm really excited about this because, like, I think that something really cool happens when you enable players to be creative. You look at Minecraft, you look at SimCity. These games where you just give them the tools, you let them loose in the world, and I have no doubt that if you let, you know, the Zelda games become more about letting the players, you know, explore the world at their own pace and find out their own creative solutions to things that are not kind of designer-driven, you'll end up with, like, a billion crazy YouTube videos of people saying, like, look what I found out in this game. Look at this crazy trick that I found out that no one ever planned for and, you know, that probably no other player than me will ever see.
Well, side note, I'm glad you reminded me about it because that was going to be my finishing move last week that I couldn't remember. That already exists in Zelda. I saw they were doing this thing for charity of the guys doing speed runs of all these different games, and I saw this kid do a speed run of Ocarina of Time.
Oh, this is nuts.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's 12 minutes or something ridiculously short. And
so hard to find that little crease to get through, though, to break the world.
It is... No, I think it's 22 minutes. But it is the greatest 22 minutes of video gaming I have ever seen. I mean, this is like rivaling, you know, King of Kong for like the greatest video game feat I have ever seen. It's this kid. God, I wish I could remember his name. I'm sure there's gonna be 1,000 people in the talkback who do. Par for the course for me this week, though. But he's doing this thing for charity. He's got a crowd of dudes behind him. They're live streaming the whole thing. He's explaining how he's doing it as he's doing it and talking about the history of searching for faster ways to get through things and how to skip stuff. And the amount of skill that he's showing in doing all these things and the level of detail that people have put into finding these little glitches and these crazy combinations of things you can do to just skip forward and trick the game into doing certain things. I highly recommend anybody who has not seen it, check it out if you can. It's on YouTube now. I watched the whole thing. It was riveting. Anyway, that was a little side note because you reminded me. But I think it's interesting that you interpret this as something that will enable creativity. And I hope you're right, but I'm not sure that you're right. Because I don't know if allowing non-linearity by definition allows for creativity. I hope it does. You're saying just in the sense of choosing what you get to do next, you're being creative.
Well, just giving the players tools to do things in the world and like not gating things in a specific order every single time. Because like that's kind of how you know, you unlock this weapon, that unlocks this weapon, this one, this weapon. But I think if you kind of like let players find out things on their own, make out their own stories that they generate themselves, I think that's there's something there.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a compromise space in between that would still keep some of the, you know, linkness to the game. So that, you know, so for instance, you know, I could find a new weapon out in the environment. And
there's only one. There's only two. It's a wooden sword or a master sword.
That's
the
only weapon.
There are no weapons.
You find a new item, and it naturally, by virtue of where I found it, led me into the next area that would be explored by that. But while I'm inside that area, maybe it's still, you know, maybe there's still elements of mixing in things that I had already or maybe had not yet discovered.
Well, the exciting thing going down Brandon's idea behind this is, you know, if they designed boss encounters and puzzles to have multiple solutions based on the items that you have, I think that's...
That would be cool.
I think that's a little unrealistic an expectation to perhaps have, but I think it would be awesome to be able to say, well, you can beat this monster with the slingshot and your sword and shield, or you can beat him with...
Or even in mission design, right? So you have a quest where you can go and get your sword, or maybe you talk to somebody else and you figure out there's a, you know, you can actually go out and get the materials and fashion a slightly better sword if you want to go that route. So it's you know, yeah, maybe you need a sword, but there are 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways to do it, or maybe a completely alternate way that involves no sword at all. But you allow players to get in there and use these building blocks.
I'd buy into that.
You know, to make their own solution.
I just and actually, now that I think about it, it's just kind of a silly concern because obviously they take the Zelda world very, very seriously. So I think they'd be the first ones to say that, hey, we're going to think about all of these context changes and how much, you know.
It just shows you how far away from a finished game they are. I think it's just so like conceptual at this point. But Jeff, answer your own question. What is the Zelda trope that you would most want to sacrifice?
Well, you know, I was joking about jump buttons, but I think for me, and this is sort of a nebulous thing, but it's non-specific, but it's a way to streamline the questing. Because I think the biggest problem with me when I got into Zelda games is that, you know, unless you're playing it frequently on a regular basis, you know, and it's hard to put down a Zelda game and come back, you know, a few weeks later and remember exactly where you were, what you had to do. There isn't a whole lot of, you know, I'm not talking about handholding, but I'm talking about basic indications about, you know, what your next objective is. And they've gotten better about that in the in the past couple of games. But that, and I guess maybe if you moved into a more creative sort of space where you were, you know, be able to invent your own solutions to things, that becomes less of a problem just by proxy because you're not trying to get through a linear path.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely Zelda's got that uptime and downtime for me where it's like you've got sections of the game which are exciting and then you've got other sections where maybe you're trying to suss out a puzzle or maybe you're, you know, not 100% sure where you need to go or where to get the bombs that you need to blow up this place you know you need to get to. I mean, I know a lot of people really like that, but the way that it strikes me in Zelda is it's such an isolating experience because it's just you. The characters talk to you, but they're not really there is no, you know, voiceover dialogue. There's nothing. There's something that's preventing me from really, you know, feeling compelled to continue all the time.
I love the puzzle nature of Zelda, and I love the fact that there are times when I can sit down and play for an hour and I'm really just walking around trying to figure out one thing that entire time. I think that is so bold a thing for that kind of game to still be doing in this day and age because there's a confidence in allowing the player to be stuck in Zelda. Sure. And I think back to Skyward Sword, which was one of my very favorite games that year and is, I think, a spectacular Zelda entry into that series. And the things that I don't like about it, honestly, are few. And one of them is the backtracking that's in that game, which I think expands when you go non-linear. You know, linear usually means just continue moving to new things. You know, you get to go to new places.
But a linear, if it's A to B, but it goes through 18 other points, you can still zigzag, go back and forth across the map. That's still a linear journey, right?
Yeah.
It's where you're able to choose between, you know, points B, C, and D, or E, And then those branch off, and eventually, you know, you end up with this web of
yeah.
It's just how do you design that? I mean, I don't know.
Well, and the only other thing that I really disliked about that experience was the inane dialogue that I had to sit through, the text that comes up on the screen super slowly, and you know, that's what I want to get rid of in a
so
Zelda
you want
game.
Zelda to be voiced?
I want Zelda to be voiced, and or improve the writing.
Think about how hard it's going to be to finally choose a voice for Link.
I don't think it'll be. Who gives a shit? Really?
No, make Link mute. Keep Link mute.
Just you can keep Link mute.
Give
yeah.
everybody else.
Yeah, he never says anything anyway.
No. Bring your side north, and it'll all be good. It'll sound like every other character.
Yeah, there you go.
About this, what if you challenged the health system? I mean, let's get radical about the hearts. Hearts have been a staple of every Zelda, right? Yet at the same time,
but it's so elegant. Okay. Getting heart containers is such a wonderful.
I understand it's a big part of the collection.
And I don't want a recharging health meter in my Zelda game. I
mean, maybe you don't have a recharging health meter. What if you really like tried to think outside the box and go with some entirely creative, clever way of approaching it? Because at the end of the day, Link's journey is always a hero's story. So you always are at odds with this. If I die, the story ends and I have to start over sort of situation, right? So what if you're able to give the player a way to still be in jeopardy, still need to be safe in their combat and, you know, have some threat, right? At the same time, not be pinned to, I have, you know, a bar. It's still a health bar. It's just broken into heart segments. Some other form of, you know, whatever that system of player health would be, of Link's health would be inside the game.
It's interesting. For my money,
you know he's not going to die. I mean, you know at the end of the game, when you win, you will not have died. So all of the deaths that you had over the course of playing the game are merely interruptions to send you back to an earlier spot to play it through it again and quote unquote get it right.
There's no dying in the cave.
Yeah, right.
That's how they handle it.
I really mean it. There's no dying.
There's
in the
no
cave.
Dying in the cave. And
seriously,
then you respawn. Like, yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, I mean you could steal from MMOs in a large sense where they give you penalties that don't have anything to do with like
maybe
gold penalties or stuff breaks in your inventory or you know
anyway. Maybe that's one way to do it or you know maybe there's some sort of influence meter or I don't know. Or legendary status, you know, constantly building your legendary status. And when you fail against a monster or whatever, you lose some status and have to go back out someplace else and regain that status because you're constantly trying to build up to be the legend.
Actually, I really like that idea as using prestige as a primary driver for character development.
Because ultimately you're on a hero's quest and that, you know, you're trying to evolve from, you know, and you always have that, like Link always has these humble beginnings and from those humble beginnings becomes the hero of the story.
Are you asking for some sort of Dark Souls permadeath system?
Garnet is always advocating for more Dark Souls.
That might actually also be an interesting approach too. They could go permadeath. Go that way.
Link is dead. Face it.
Yeah, you are dead.
Sorry, Link. By far for me the most exciting thing is this idea of multiplayer in Zelda, because the most fun I have playing Zelda games and the way I want to always play Zelda games is the way I used to want to play that's interesting. I'll get to that in a second. No, so let me stick with my first point. The way I want to play Zelda games.
You're off your meds today.
He's having really a brain related episode.
I am having folks. Yes. Is sitting in a room with someone else who's going, try moving that block over there. Or, you know, we're working on the puzzles together. That is the best way to play Zelda games. One person's driving, but they're not necessarily having more fun because everybody's involved in figuring out the puzzle. Excuse me. Excuse me. So now if you have someone who doesn't have to be in the same room with you, who you can log on with together, and you are both playing a character in that world, and you have to figure out these puzzles together. And I don't even necessarily, like, I think the mistake is to then create puzzles that are co-op puzzles, where one person has to push that button, and the other person has to go and push that button. Like, that doesn't have to be the solution all the time.
Everything doesn't have to be cookies and cream.
Exactly. Just let us hang out in the same space at the same time, working on the same problem. That's fun. That is fun. And I think that could be a really cool.
What makes
really
you think cool. It'll be online multiplayer?
Well, not a lot. It's going to be one person with the freaking pad and one person with the screen.
But it could be awesome.
It could be
very
awesome.
You could have that exact same scenario you just set up of you sitting around with a friend in your den. One of you has the pad, one of you has the controller. Each of you now has a real viable engagement with the game, as opposed to one person saying they're not doing anything while the other person fights.
Yeah, I think the problem, I mean, I hope that what they don't do is you're sort of a sidekicky.
Yeah, player two is Tingle.
That's what I was saying before. And you have to touch the screen and make rupees drop from the sky or whatever the fuck. You know, like, I don't want it to be, forgive the term, girlfriend mode. I don't want it to be that. I want it to be an actual, like, let us be equal partners in solving something. I think that would be really more interesting. Anyway, also they, you know, showed really bizarre shit for the party game. And anyway, we can talk
about
the
party game looks a lot. How do you think so E3 is going to have screens for Super Smash? So I'm going to presume that that's not going to be this year.
No.
And then it's going to have playable for a newly announced 3D Mario. Action Mario game and playable for a newly announced Mario Kart.
Right. Now, Mario Kart's going to be Mario Kart with an extra screen. That's going to be entirely predictable.
Yep.
The Mario game better be awesome.
Galaxy 3?
It should not be Galaxy 3, I think. I think it should be something different and awesome.
Galaxy did revolutionize. I mean,
well, it did, and I love it, but I think it needs to be it needs to be something that legitimizes the pad. It needs to be like, here's why we did the
pad.
And
why couldn't that be Galaxy?
It could, but I think it would be more interesting to have its own identity.
I'm just saying, looking at the course of things, Mario 2D games are still Mario 2D games. And
yeah, but
They haven't broken.
I think Sunshine,
too far,
like Sunshine, maybe
Sunshine was,
may have been a failure, but at least it was this new identity.
It was just tough.
Well, right. And it certainly, I don't think, is anybody's favorite Mario.
If it hadn't been so hard, I bet there would have been a lot more people that liked it, because it had some clever ideas.
Now, that's the thing. It really was its own identity for that new console. You know what I mean? And I think that Galaxy was that for the Wii. And there needs to be some new take. It doesn't need to be. I would like that to happen. I would be more excited about that. And I think it would make the Wii U feel much more like its own.
My concern is that I think they're feeling a tremendous amount of pressure now to get games out for the system. And Galaxy is a mold that I think that they could add to and find some ways to interact with the pad, but still have at least, you know, a beginning document to work from.
Yeah.
To head down something, because this is the presentation where, by the way, Iwata was apologizing for launching a system and not having any new games for it in January and any new games for it in February, and then giving us the list of games that are coming out after that and include things like Wii Fit U. And that's fine. Wii Fit, I'm not denigrating Wii Fit as a game, you know, in itself. I'm just saying that that's not the game content that the game player is looking for. They're anxious to play the games they're going to sit down and play on their couch. It's great. Wii Fit U might be cool. It might be a great fitness thing. It might be another craze. I could do all those things right. But that's not really, like, when you're saying, here's what we got coming out. By the way, we have nothing in January and February. And then we have Wii Fit U. So get excited. Like, that's not going to get people poked up. So if they have those two playable at E3, you know, my thought is, are they trying to fast track games like Mario Kart and a Mario Galaxy-like game so they can have them ready for this fall?
I think they are. I think they also, to Jeff's point, they need to do something to prove to the more discerning customer why they need a tablet controller. Like they need, I mean, and I think a new Mario IP would be a great opportunity to do that. It also might speak to how much, you know, the design, the game development side and the hardware side were actually communicating or not communicating about making this thing, because it doesn't look to me like Nintendo even knows what to do with it. Like,
they, well, that, really, that Wii Party thing, or the Wii U Party thing, has some interesting applications of like using the pad with two people on either side of it. And
right,
stuff.
But I don't, again, if it's if it's strictly party game stuff, you know, I'm sure that's great. But
speaking of things that'll get you poked up, as Garnet just said, about stuff, I want to leave you guys with this question. Because I did not intend to talk about Nintendo my entire segment, but we did. That's fine. It was fun. I will ask you, Brandon, this question. I don't know if you had a chance to see the teaser for Elder Scrolls Online.
I have not.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a big cinematic, like, kind of live action thing.
It's like any trailer that Blizzard's released for anything.
Right. Why do we give a shit about that? Like, so many people that I follow on Twitter retweeted that link and said, oh my God, I'm so excited for this. Why? It feels like to me, like, if Ford was like, our new car, here's a video. And it showed it like shooting lasers and flying. And
Ford has an ad where the car flies.
They do have an ad where the car flies. Fuck. But you know what I'm saying? Like, or, you know, and it would be like, well, it feels like it can go 300 miles an hour and shoot lasers and fly. It was just giving you the feeling of what it would be like to drive that car. You know what I'm saying? It's the game is nothing like this thing. And why do cinematic trailers matter? It's nothing like what you're going to play.
I'll let Brendan answer because you asked him first. But I definitely have a.
Why don't we let him answer? We'll take our mid break, and he can answer as like the beginning of his segment.
Well, that's next. Me bogarting his segment.
No, it's not.
Are you excited about cinematic trailers, Brandon?
You know what? I'm not crazy about them, but I kind of do like watching them. They are fun to watch.
Listen, they're cool, but they don't make me excited about the game because they're not the game.
But you know what? I mean, they give you a feeling of what they're trying to do.
Right, and Ford's trying to make you feel like you're going 500 miles an hour and flying with laser car.
And I think that's perfectly valid. It's like a marketing thing.
So you're telling me the first time you saw the MotorStorm PS3 video...
Was supposed to be gameplay.
Yeah, it was supposed to be gameplay. Sure, okay.
It was!
I know.
At the time.
And then there was the, it's in-game assets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's why people get excited about it, because they want to dream that dream.
But that Elder Scrolls trailer... bears no relation to what the game will be. Zero.
Okay.
Are you mad, bro?
In our lifetime, we will see games that look like that.
But this game isn't going to look like that.
In the meantime, I'll give you an example. When I look at those things now after having seen hundreds of them or however many, I mean, I've probably seen most of the big high profile ones that have been made. I look at it and I go, okay, who's the developer? What are they doing? What's the timeline? What feel are they going for? So, for example, when I saw CD Projekt Red's Cyberpunk trailer, yeah, I know the game's not going to look like that. But I look at the trailer and I go, look at all this stuff that they're trying to do with the world. Like, look at all these systems that they are illustrating here for me. It's like looking at concept art, right? I know that's not what it's going to look like. Like, you know, but it gives me a pretty good idea if I combine it with the other information that I have, like who's developing it and, you know, what type of game it is and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, I will leave you with this. Exhibit A, Dead Island. I'm just going to leave you at that. Okay. Because that trailer had nothing to do with the game. It got everybody excited.
I agree with you. I'm not saying that always works. And I'm saying when I looked at that, I was like, who is Deep Silver? And there's no way this is real.
Yeah, but wait till you see the new Saints Row trailer.
And I'm not talking about graphics. I'm not talking about graphics. I'm not saying graphics like, oh, well, why doesn't the graphics look as good? I'm just saying what you do in the game so often has no relation to what is happening in the trailer.
Well, so in the Morrowind, the Elder Scrolls Online thing that they're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you know what Elder Scrolls has done in the past, and it is not anywhere near that kinetic.
Well, and the MMO version is going to be even less like that.
No, but I think that, I mean, you look at that and you call bullshit, right?
Yes.
I think most people that know that series and that are excited about that game have a good idea as to how much bullshit that trailer purports and how much is actually worth paying attention to.
I give up.
Plus, they're cool to watch.
Let's get out of here before I say something else.
All right, stick around. When we come back on the other side, we will hand the mics over to Brendan, who's going to talk about, I don't know, he's got a bunch of games he's been playing, and who knows what else we'll get into. So stick around. Week in Confirmed. We'll be right back for the second half of the show. This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up to the minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. All right, we're back and ready to roll. Brendan, save us. You're a listener of the show, so have at. Destroy us.
So I've been playing Far Cry 3.
Awesome.
And, you know, Far Cry 2 for me was like my game of the year for, I think that was 2018 or so.
Such a great game.
Oh, so good. It was so, like, bold and just so not caring about what the player wants, and I just love that.
Not caring about what the player wants. How so?
Well, I mean, it's not friendly toward the player, I feel. Like when you play a lot of games, they kind of like, they try to guide you into the world in a really smooth and frictionless way. They try to give you an experience and they give you things that you want all the time. It's like candy. But whereas Far Cry 2, it was not like candy. It was like you had to earn the fun.
Little vegetables in there.
Yes.
Some vegetables.
And I hated that game for like the first like 2 hours or so. But then like after the 2 hour mark, it just, there was just this weird moment where it flipped from awful to amazing, where like you start to realize, oh, okay, I get it. This game is not about giving me, you know, this amazing experience. It's about me having to like survive in this world where everyone shoots me and things respawn at checkpoints every 2 minutes. And I have to take malaria medicine. My gun literally explodes in my hands when I shoot it too much. Well, yeah, so Far Cry 2 was a game I really, really liked.
I want to stay on that point for a second, if you don't mind. I find that so interesting, and it resonates with me because I just got a Kindle Paperwhite, and I've been like on this reading kick like crazy. And I've been reading a bunch of sci-fi and fantasy, as is my wont. But you know, I've noticed that happens a lot with books. Like there are certain books where it's like, there's this guy, and he lives in this world, and the world is not quite what you think it is. It's different from our world because there's, you know, this happened and that happened and there's these things, and let me explain how these things work. And then there's other authors. George R. R. Martin is one. I'm reading Dan Simmons' Hyperion right now, which is doing that, where it's like, fuck it, you're in this world. I'm not explaining how it works. Yes. I'm just going to talk like you already know how it works, and you'll catch up. If you can hang, you'll catch up. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's something about it that, like, you feel that the work disrespects you. It's not, like, pandering down to, like, the lowest common denominator and trying to, like, get a large mass audience. It's about, like, all right, you're in this. I don't care if you like me or not. It's all you're going to get.
I think there's 1,000 people right now screaming out Dark Souls.
Yes.
Do you love that game as well?
I love Dark Souls. I love Spelunky. I love games like that where it's, like, you just gotta pull the fun out yourself. It's not going to give it to you for free. I love that. So then when Far Cry 3, like the trailers started coming out, I was a little bit miffed because like I started seeing things like they took out the paper map and I had a little mini map down there in the corner. Now it's all about like gaining XP points and getting these like, sick combos. It's like, oh, this is not really the
Far Cry. They kind of care about you now a little.
They care about me now. They care about me now. And that made me very uncomfortable.
You probably are attracted to girls that treat you like shit.
Aren't
video
we all?
Games. Video games. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
My girlfriend listens to this show. I'm just going to sit here and listen.
She is the sweetest.
Oh, she's amazing.
Best person
she's
I've
the
ever
most
met.
Amazing sweetheart in the world.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So then,
Errol, you really are, baby.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. It was funny until you made it real.
That was what made it more funny. Got you to laugh.
Brandon, go on.
But then I got the game anyways, because like I'm a sucker for having to try I had to try it out. And you know what? There are parts of it that I just totally worked. I love the fact that there are just animals just roaming around the island. Like Far Cry 2 has some of that, but it's not really so much. And I love that Far Cry 3 just went berserk with just having a bazillion animals just roaming around and just completely screwing you over during your missions. Like, you'll be just like, you know, trying to scout out this area, trying to like tag all the enemies, and then some, you know, a jaguar will suddenly start biting you.
Freaking boars.
Seriously, they're the worst. Yeah,
they don't look like much, but they will fuck you up.
They call it, I mean, like, you're sneaking around here. You're like, shit.
Now, Komodos are still my nemesis. Because I'm usually in the bushes, and that's usually where they are. And I'm like, is that a snake? Or, oh my God, it's on my leg!
I like, I'm just going to go for a little swim to get around to the better leg. Oh shit, there's sharks! So many sharks! Why are there also so many sharks?
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it just creates these little, like what you guys are talking about, it just creates these stories that, you know, that are not scripted out, that are not, you know, planned out by designer. And that's what games do best, I think. But then you start doing, like, the story missions. And, like, for some reason, it just seems that this game doesn't realize that, what I feel is that the best part of the game is that it gives you an open world with these all these cool systems to play with. But then the story missions happen, and they lock you into these, you know, very tightly scripted areas.
That's a really good point, yeah.
The first time, and it happened really early, the first time I walked a direction and it said, turn back or you will abort the mission.
Yes.
The first time that happened, I was like, oh, shit, we're in that kind of game right now? Yeah. I didn't think that that's the game we were playing.
And to your point, the most egregious example of that I ran into is there was a mission where I had ended another mission. I had been exploring and I was up on top of a cliff. Hang glider, awesome. Mm-hmm. And I look down, I'm like, oh, great. Right below me, there is one of the next mission objectives. So I can just fly down and like land on the side. And anyway, the bottom line was
that same exact thing happened to me.
Yeah. And
it's
so you're
weird, it happened to me too.
You're flying exactly and you're like, oh my God, I'm leaving the mission area. Okay. So you try to bank around and it's just, it is impossible to approach that mission in any real way from the sky, which is like, and, you know, that's obviously super frustrating. So, yeah.
But the designer meant for you to go down the side of the hill, okay?
Yeah. And those limiters unfortunate.
Yeah. It was, but it's a missed opportunity. You're right. I mean, there's that emergent gameplay and that if you're going to, because when you're roaming around the world, it is so awesome and it is so empowering. And then you go into a mission and it kind of walls things off a little too much.
You just start playing the mission wrong and then like, oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
I think that little warning that happens in far too many games, I think that should never happen in a game. That if you have to say to me, turn around or I'm aborting your mission, you've made it wrong. I think that you either have to let me do that or provide an in-context reason why I don't want to go that way or can't go that way. You know, either there's a wall there, there's a, you know, mountain there, whatever it is. Make me not notice that you're bounding me.
I think Rockstar handles it pretty well in their open world stuff, whereas if you break out of a mission chain and there's actually – they'll be like, you know, so-and-so got away that you were chasing or, you know, something blew up before you could prevent it from blowing up. They actually tell you what it is, but they don't like say you can't go this way.
But they do far too often they do mission failed, which I hate. I hate the just you fucking failed the mission.
Wait, in
Rockstar games, in GTA, and
well, I mean, failure. You mean? Oh, yeah.
Like they got away. Yeah. You're on a chase mission, and it's like just turned me to wrong time.
But you're still in the world. But like in Grand Theft Auto, those missions are very much like generated space missions within the larger world. And there's typically you need to go here and do this. And if you go off and fuck around, you're not going to be able to go there and do that within the time or. Whatever. It's like sometimes it's timed. Sometimes you're chasing someone. You have to stay close enough to them.
I know. Or evade somebody. It all annoys me because
I don't completely disagree.
Because it's so binary. It's either did it or you didn't do it.
No, but there's a dynamic nature to how it all unfolds. Like, I mean, I don't know. You can play the same car chase in, I don't know if it's so much true for GTA 4, but in previous GTA games, like there were missions that I would beat my head up against the wall five or six times. And then the seventh time I would blaze right through it and be like, well, the car didn't go crazy or it didn't go down that crazy street that I couldn't navigate those past five times.
Or you led them some other place. I mean, there's a degree of freedom there that is not quite equaled in Far Cry 3.
No, and like what you're talking about the GTA is that I totally missed that of the old GTA games where I felt like, especially like GTA 3 and Vice City, mm-hmm. I felt those two are the strongest ones because if you compare this to the GTA 4, where GTA 4, what seems like a large majority of the missions they give you kind of these scripted spectacles.
Yeah, they do.
Like even the car chases, like, all right, this is the part where the garbage truck almost runs me over. This is a part where he does a right turn. This is probably just a left turn. Whereas like Vice City and GTA 3, it was much more about you got to assassinate this dude.
Mm-hmm. And he's going from A to B, and he may not take the same linear route from A to B
exactly, on the
way there when you replay it. Yeah.
So. Yeah, and like it just makes me wonder like, I just feel like open world games, they oftentimes don't take advantage of the fact that they have these amazing worlds and these amazing systems. And so like the side missions and like, you know, like the outposts in Far Cry 3, I felt were like amazing. Mm-hmm. I wish the game was just taking over outposts or just hunting down the assassination missions.
Red Faction Guerrilla is one of my favorite overlooked games, and it really is that it's just the entire game is just do the fun shit in the world and you know the story will happen kind of deal.
It's like Just Cause.
well, minus the story part.
Hoisted by my own petard.
You set that one up too easy, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, yeah. It just seems that these big games, they feel compelled to give you these spectacle events. And the only way they can guarantee that to happen is they must use the structure where, you know, they lead you down a certain hallway to hit this trigger, and this trigger fires these choreographed explosions. Which is fine and good, because you are guaranteeing these things to happen for the player every single time, and you know that you're going to get this awesome money shot. But I think that what they're missing is that oftentimes when the player just kind of organically does it themselves, that's just way more impactful. That's something that they'll put on YouTube saying, like, holy shit, I made this insane Red Gorilla faction chain reaction happen.
Yeah.
And you don't really see that for, like, you know, a scripted mission in an open world game.
Yeah.
I think I totally get what you're saying. Like, the player agency is so important, right? Because you're like, you're engaged, you're playing it, you're doing it, you're doing it. You're doing it, and you feel right. Like you had control over it and you did it. At the same time, the designer's challenge is that if you're doing it because you decided to do it, how and where you wanted to do it, I have a real problem trying to figure out how do I give you the presentation that I could give you if I knew where and when you were doing it. Right?
I don't quite understand what you mean.
So, like, if I put you in that hall, right, and I know that right here you're going to have to be successful, evade the giant rock that's coming down the hallway, then I can, like, do that. I can, like, control the cameras. I can do all the special effects. I can have all kinds of cool stuff. But if I let you, like, go through however many canyons, wherever, and eventually you get to a spot where you evade a rock that was coming down the canyon, yeah, it's cool that you evaded the rock coming down the canyon, but I don't know where it is, so I can't necessarily control, you know, making it look as cool as I could when I knew exactly where you were going to do it.
Yeah, and I think that kind of giving the player that power to create their own stories is the best thing about it. Like, you know, DayZ, where people just are let loose in this world, in this crazy Mad Max world where, you know, you give them the power to just do whatever they want. And it creates some of the best stories
in
games. Or Dwarf Fortress, especially, or Eve, things like that.
When you're in DayZ, you're, you know, literally lying in grass, rolling left to right, rolling, so that the zombies won't hear you. But then the zombies don't hear you, and you feel like, oh, yeah, it's all accomplished. Then you, of course, stand up and take a step, and you're screwed up. God damn it. Stupid zombies.
I was watching a DayZ, you know, fan video or whatever. It was just a bunch of guys in ghillie suits, like, riding around in a Volkswagen Golf. Like, I mean, it was, and been, you know, they're talking to each other and cursing at each other and stuff. And occasionally they'll stop and get out and pop some zombies or some, you know, other players.
But they had accumulated some mad gear, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, these guys were fully outfitted. And
they had a Golf.
Well, yes, yes. That was the key. The supreme automobile.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's that I could not agree more. I think that games that enable emergent storytelling, player authored storytelling, even if it's slightly guided, as in something like Skyrim, like, you know, you're going on quests and stuff, but then out while you're on your quest, you have your own sub stories and your own sub missions and things. And it's not quite as dynamic, but I like that sort of, it's very rewarding to feel like my choice is actually, like, maybe I figured out a better way to do it than everyone else. Like, I'm not just doing the same thing as everyone else. Right? Yeah. I can come and talk to you guys about, oh, yeah, I did it this way, or I tried this. It's not just like, oh, did you get past the part with the dude? You know, it's like, yeah, we all pressed A.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, no, I've been proselytizing about creativity in games for a long time. But I also, to make the opposite point, I don't want to give up my Uncharteds of the world either.
Oh, no, definitely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a place for that really crafted, as you were saying, you know, that hallway that's beautiful to look at, fun to be a part of, has a pace that is absolutely set by the designer, and I know I'm going to be taken on this incredible ride.
Half-Life series.
Half-Life. No. Call of Duty, you know, single player of those games. I think there's definitely still a place for that, and I wouldn't want to give it up either, but...
No, I completely agree with that. But what gets me is when the game world is built around this open world, but then they make you play Call of Duty inside it.
Yeah, yeah.
That just kind of feels like there's a disconnect there. Yeah. Like, you're making two games at the same time. Why not just make one really good game focusing on your strongest asset, as opposed to kind of doing a good job at both things.
Now, in fairness, I will say, because I totally agree with you, I love Far Cry 3, like, through and through. The scripted missions, while frustrating in that respect, I thought were some of the better scripted missions that I'd seen in a shooter, particularly. That said, yeah, it was kind of a waste of the open world in certain cases.
Can I ask you a question, Brandon?
Sure.
As an independent game developer, if you had a magical box that gave you infinite money and infinite time, what's the kind of game you would want to make?
I'm kind of limited by the fact that I am just one person,
right?
And I don't have $1 billion and I don't have a giant studio or cubicles.
Magic box,
yes. one open world game that I really enjoyed was the first Crackdown.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Such a good game. I totally agree with that.
Crackdown, the quest for orbs, as I like to call it.
Well, yeah. I can immediately see why that clicked, because that was a game of lots of emergent fun.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of purposely, you know, left out a lot of the story stuff. They left out a lot of, like, NPC dialogue, whatever it is.
Yeah, that was definitely what you're talking about, of, like, just kill the dudes. I don't give a shit how you do it. Just they're in the big ivory tower. Go get in there somehow, kill them somehow, and you'll be happy.
Yeah, they just let you loose in this world. There are dudes you need to kill. Kill them, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all they give you, and I love that. So for me, like, I would love to work on something like an open world game where it's not based on, you know, these scripted missions that designers make, but it's more about letting you play with the systems. So where it's like, let's say a Crackdown. I love it if the game was about, you know, you learn the schedule of this drug lord, and so you need to find out the best time to strike. But then if you mess up the strike, then that'll cause repercussions. That'll affect your life. Almost like, I mean, this is stuff that you see in, like, Eve or DayZ, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is, you know, I think this is kind of the future of games for me, at least. I think there's something, I think people like being creative. I think people like playing the systems.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can – it's one of the things that, you know, it takes full advantage of the video game format, whereas, like, a lot of games could kind of translate to movies or literature. But then you have things like Dwarf Fortress or Eve, where it's like, I wouldn't know where to begin to translate into a movie, because it's all about letting the players be insane and backstabbing and planning out these year-long, you know, takeover plans.
So do you like the idea of having a world that's sort of simulated and kind of going on its own, and you drop the player into that and they figure out how to interact with that world? But because I think for me, the downside of DayZ, and obviously as a mod and, you know, whatever, for a first step in that direction, but the downside for me was there wasn't enough going on already. You know what I mean? There were zombies wandering around, but the first few hours of playing DayZ, it seems like this infinite possibility of, like, just over that ridge there could be anything. And sometimes there was cool stuff, but most of the time there wasn't.
Right.
And I think that the more interesting game there is the world that's sort of self-sufficient and going on and isn't just sitting around waiting for the player to be there, but is sort of already a series of interlocking gears, and you get to fuck with those gears in certain ways, you know?
No, I agree. It's like, this is what we're talking about with, like, how Rockstar makes their GTA games. The missions are kind of like spectacles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because you're guaranteed these things to happen. Whereas what you're talking about, you do get the spectacle things, but definitely not at the same rate as a Rockstar game.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of a, you know, gambling out of play.
Yeah.
Am I interpreting what you were saying about, so you said, the example you gave of following the drug lord, then, like, if you fail at the mission, that there'd be repercussions. Am I interpreting right that you wouldn't necessarily, like, that wouldn't be like a fail and then you have to go to the mission over again? It would be like, if you failed, and then the drug lord's still alive, and then something happens, and maybe you're out to get him again. Maybe he comes to get you. Maybe he decides that you're tough and wants to meet. I love that idea. I love this idea of missions that aren't just a black and white win or lose, and then have, like, states that can exist based off of what happens in those missions.
Well, people are always, you know, talking about the multiple endings thing and stuff, but maybe the real nugget is multiple endings for individual quests, right?
Yeah.
So
multiple middles.
Performance-based.
Multiple middles.
Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, exactly. So it's like they're performance-based. They may not be, like, good, medium, and bad. It may be like, you know, do it this way, you get this thing. Do it this way, you get this thing, or, you know, whatever. But to have that, again, that's player-authored choice. I mean, yeah, it's more scripted. It's, you know, finite number of possibilities. But That's a damn good idea.
What about the idea? I mean, again, this is how we get into fantasy land and everybody gets pissed off because we're just spitballing. But I like it. I enjoy it. What about the idea of not a massively multiplayer online game, but a sort of respectively multiplayer online game, you know, where you get like a group of like 20 or 30 people in a world that is set up to do certain things. And those 20 or 30 people get to interact with that world, and it changes based on all the stuff that they did in it. And so, you know, it's almost like a guild having its own world that they can fuck with. And then by the end of it, by the end of, you know, however many hours of gameplay, their world looks awfully a lot different than a different guild's world would. You know what I'm saying? So that you're really, it's not Minecraft where you're physically deforming it, but that your actions, you know, if you
let the, socially deforming it.
Well, if you let the gang member live and you guys failed to make that mission happen, you know, certain things happen. Or if you, you know, if you successfully do this mission, it destroys that building. And if that building isn't there, then certain other things don't happen. And, you know,
how would you give the player awareness of understanding the complex interactions of what their choices had been versus what other players would have been?
I mean, I think you kind of let that all happen in a offline or in a, you know, in an
forums.
Out of the, yeah, okay. Your world ends up being different.
Oh, wow, dude, it's like this in my world. It's like,
exactly.
It's sort of like Fringe.
It's like the multiplayer version of Heavy Rain. You know, so that like
it's funny you mentioned Heavy Rain, because I think Heavy Rain, we were talking a minute ago about like repercussions. Heavy Rain is really good at letting the game continue to progress.
Right.
Right. Even if you fail. Yeah. No, it's good. Well, and taking a city block, for example, and fully simulating that in a computer environment. Right. Yeah. So it's just a city block, but every apartment there is populated. Every business is running. Everybody's got their own routines. And yes, this is a nightmare from a processing perspective. But that sort of thing. In fact, I want to say that Warren Spector talked about
a project
like this like a long time ago. Like one of his dream projects was to create. And then you could create narratives that take place, a murder mystery or a, you know, more common, banal, like, you know, you're just regular dude going to work if that's your thing. Like if you want to play more Simsy or if you want, I mean, you could basically, you know, insert story triggers that the player could trip or come across, you know, that would trigger events rather. This is the wrong language to use because we were talking about scripting. What I mean is you would pick up the phone, you'd answer the phone in your apartment, and you could choose to, you know, communicate with that person and do whatever they said, or you could walk down the street and buy a loaf of bread. You could, you know, so it's, you're still in control of everything that you're doing. But the world kind of goes on and has its own set of things.
It's a fascinating idea. I mean, it gets to almost like science fiction virtual reality idea.
Yeah, almost.
But imagine that as a platform upon which you could develop different genres of games. Right. So you have this little world that is populated, and you can turn it into a shooter. You can turn it into a murder mystery. You can turn it into a romance game. I mean, it could be all these different weird genres based on the events that you start triggering in those worlds and all the behaviors that,
or you could just base it all on Disney characters and
you could plug them into a plot. Completely nuts.
I know. I just want games to be.
But you also completely took over Brandon's segment there.
God,
no, beanies.
This is all stuff.
I'm not having a good show.
You can have some of my segment.
I've been injured this week. Mentally.
I was fascinated because another game you had done that you've been playing was Borderlands 2, and I'm curious what your take on Borderlands 2 is.
Yeah, so Borderlands 1 kind of fell a little bit flat for me. Like, I was excited when I heard about Diablo with guns, and like, I love Diablo, I love guns.
Good.
So that seemed like a perfect fit, but for some reason when I played it, it felt, I don't know, I just felt, you know, I was just going down corridors just shooting guys over and over again. But for something about Borderlands 2, it completely worked for me. It worked for me because...
So interesting, because it seems like a very similar game.
You know what? You're right, but they changed enough that it just completely brought to another level for me. For me, it was a few things. For one, I felt that the gameplay systems were a lot more... They started playing with a lot more systematic stuff, I felt. Like, there's a gun that weakens the enemy. You, like, tag them with a certain paint. And then you start shooting them again with this other gun, and it'll cause more damage, whatever it is. There's more, like, environmental stuff kind of scattered around the world to play with. So you shoot, like, the lightning barrel, whatever it was. And so the gameplay was just felt stronger. And secondly, like, the writing was really funny, I thought.
Yeah.
And what was great about a couple things is that humor is hard to do, I think, in games.
For sure.
Like, there's just not much out there because it's hard to do, I think. And, you know, even ones that do try it kind of fall flat a lot of times. But what blows my mind is that this is a game that doesn't really need writing. This is a game about getting headshots. But then, like, they saw it, they thought, I guess they just figured, you know, let's just give this game some, you know, good dialogue, some good, interesting storyline, interesting characters. And that, I think this is a good example of why games can benefit from good writing, because this is a game that did not need it, but I felt this kind of brought this game to, you know, a much higher quality.
That's such a good point, because it, like, I think that part of what you're getting at, like, I think, is that it gives it a lot of character.
Yeah.
And though DMC had a superlative presentation, because Ninja Theory really knows how to pull that stuff off, the writing is just bad, and the dialogue is just bad, and the attempt to make jokes are just bad. And so, despite having all of those pieces in place, I mean, I think that's one of the places it misses out on its opportunity to have character, is that, right, yeah, it's all presented great. It's like great actors filmed in beautiful stages saying ridiculously horrible dialogue.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't, like, for DMC, it doesn't even need to really be good. It just has to not be horrible and just make you want to, like, skip all the things.
And unfortunately, it's pretty cringeworthy, sadly.
Yeah. But yeah. And unfortunately, I did not get the chance to play multiplayer Borderlands 2, but I get the impression that the game was definitely kind of designed for that. So,
oh, it's awesome.
Yeah,
definitely.
I'm in anytime if you want to play. Ariel awesome. And I still play it, and we actually we haven't gotten into the new Big Hunt. Mm-hmm. We have it because we bought the season pass, but I can't pull her away from Star Ocean.
Interesting.
She started playing Star Ocean, man. What a weird... That's a weird game. You talk about, like, weird, you know, writing and story not working that well, but that game's combat system. If you ever liked the Trice games, I'm really surprised. Star Ocean Last Hope still has, like, the Trice vibe to it. Like, you know, the action combat, if you've played any of the Star Ocean games, are really good. But, man, the rest of it, there's some problem with the characters, too. Like, she has this problem with one of the characters. We won't even go into it. If you saw my tweet picture about it, you know what I'm talking about. The cat.
Now who's taking over Brandon's segment?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Apologies. All right. So we can take a break. We come back on the other side. Brandon, if there's anything else you want to talk about, you can do that. Jeff Mattis, you've got the floor as well. I'll let you guys negotiate down there on the end of the table. Stick around. We can confirm. We'll be right back. I do love getting to pick some funky jams now for the show. And thanks very much for everyone who's been asking. I will go back over the last couple of three shows, and I will start a place someplace where we'll keep a track list so you guys can. It's more than one or two people have actually asked, like, can we get a track list?
Cool.
You know, I had my secret burning desire just to play music and
you wanna
talk
be a
sports.
DJ.
Talk sports and play music and play games for fun. What were you saying? You're like showing me the Jeff
no, no,
was showing
no, no.
me.
I was just giving you an idea for your finishing move.
Oh, that's a good idea for a finishing move. What do you know? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now you're back on your game.
Nah, don't bet on it.
Now you're back on your game. So
it's Mattis's segment.
Well, and we kind of ran over Brendan some too. So they're just going to go take away, guys. You're into the table. Share.
All right. Well, I guess real quick, we can talk more about this in a coming episode, probably next week. But I did want to touch on The Cave, yes, which is Ron Gilbert's new thing that just came out. For those of you that haven't seen anything or haven't seen the trailer yet, it is a, you know, 2D adventure game that looks like a platformer. It's got sort of Metroidvania elements to it, and it's ostensibly about a sentient cave where people go to look for their heart's greatest desire. And at the beginning of the game, you pick three of, what is it, like seven characters?
I think it's seven, yeah.
Yeah, three of seven characters, and you explore the cave and try to find their innermost desires. And the way that it's sort of set up is you've got, sections of the game where you'll play through with, regardless of which three characters you pick, but then you'll get two themed areas. So each character that you choose has their own special, themed area. So the knight that I played last night, you get to the part where, that's the knight's themed area, and it's a castle, and there's a princess and a dragon and all sorts of, it's the awesome stuff you'd expect. Really, really cool. The game is, I think, I'm a huge Ron Gilbert fan in general. I mean, all the way back to Monkey Island days, yeah, and stuff. It is very well written, tons of personality, sort of sets a new bar for like charming, I think, is kind of how I would put it. I'm just really, really enamored with the characters and the animation and the look and feel of the game. And that in and of itself makes it worth, the price of admission for me. The puzzles themselves, while good, I think are mostly of the find an item and figure out which area in the level that item interacts with ilk. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of nuance and a little bit of variation on that. But it is sort of a, getting stuck has more to do with, oh, crap, where do I use this thing? Or how do I get to back to this room that I, and it's not really that big of the levels really aren't that big, so you won't get lost that much. But it is sort of a much more relaxed.
Sounds like old school adventure.
Deliberately.
It is old school adventure games. There's some really interesting twists in the sense that you're controlling all three characters that you've selected at the same time, and each of them only can carry one item at a time.
Ah.
So,
and okay, they each have a special ability that is used largely in their own themed level.
But sometimes not.
So you can use them outside of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm having a blast with it as well. It sort of reminds me of Secret of Monkey Island meets Trine.
Oh, yeah.
In the sense that you're kind of using three characters all the time. And you're right. It's the charm, the level of animation. It almost looks like claymation. It's so beautiful.
But even better than it's like claymation without the, it's not like characters have thumbprints in them or anything like that. Or
right,
it has that smudgy, realistic look. But it is very cartoony and
chunky.
Characters have weight and they're all animated. I mean, they're all markedly different. So what were the first three characters you picked?
I just picked the ones that I thought I would enjoy the most, and that was the knight, the scientist, and the time traveler. And the time traveler is awesome because the time traveler levitates on hover boots constantly.
Of course.
Yeah. And he's like,
oh, and she can teleport too.
That is the future.
Yeah.
And it's neat. You're constantly unlocking these little almost storyboards of each character's origin, really, what brought them there. And you get them in these frame by frame story moments so that, by the time you've unlocked all of their things, you get to see that led to that, led to that. And there's no text in these images. It's just all that moment where the knight was,
Well, they have a title.
Yes.
It's like a painting, right? So it's
that's
like,
true. Yeah.
You got a little title and you piece them all together. I really recommend it. If you've been looking for an adventure game and, oddly enough, there's actually a handful of good adventure games that have been coming out lately. This is definitely something you should check out, I think.
I already had one major complete crash.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Are you PCing?
No, 360.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And, to the point where I had to power down my 360. I couldn't even get to the
Oh, really? Xbox just menu. Hard locked up?
Yeah. Which is a bummer. Maybe that was my unique situation, but it really bummed me out because I had gone a long distance without saving and had to replay,
Oh, yeah, out. Yeah. That's
Once you figure it out, it goes quick, but.
Well, and some people, the criticism that I've been hearing, and this is, doesn't really bother me to a certain degree, but is there is a certain degree of backtracking that is required, partly because you're just exploring these levels and figuring out where to go. I would say that if you're worried about backtracking, don't be afraid about switching between your characters, because what'll happen is you can get your characters all spread out throughout the level, and then you're never really too far. Nobody's ever really too far away from the item that you need.
That's exactly what I would
do. Because the tendency in those things is like, oh, I got to keep my party together, and like now I'm going to move my knight up, and now I'm going to move my hillbilly up or whatever. And
but
it's
it does this awesome thing where when you get to a checkpoint to a new area where you don't have to go back, it'll automatically bring all your people there.
Right.
So you can just spread everybody out in the level and then switch between them in order to sort of be near where you need to be. And I'll be like, well, that's the guy that flips that switch. So he's going to hang out by that switch.
Right.
And I'll go get the other girl over here and she'll hang out over that.
And then this dude's going to go find the fuse that's missing. From
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so it's great. It's great.
The other game, I guess, that I'd like to talk about is I just reviewed. The review went up on Shaq News yesterday. It's Strike Suit Zero, which is, I think, Born Ready is the developer. It is a Kickstarter-funded project that is basically a...
It looked like they finished funding with Kickstarter. It looked like they'd been working on it for a while prior to that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. You're right. I was going to say, it was not fully... Yeah, it was not fully funded. It was basically, they were asking for 100 grand. They got like 175 or something like that. Really, anyway, a lot of people really excited about this game, due in large part to the sort of dearth of space shooters recently. I mean, there really hasn't been a lot of space combat games that, you know, latch onto that Wing Commander, Privateer, Free Space sort of vibe. And this game does a pretty good job. Like, there are certain things that I really, really like about it. Namely, when things are clicking and there's, you know, the battles are epic and huge and there's just so much chaos going around. So many ships flying around, ships of all sizes, capital ships and corvettes and big, and they're all blasting the crap out of each other. And when you're in the groove, it's great, but it does sort of harken back. And a lot of people actually probably like this. It harkens back to like the X-Wing versus TIE Fighter sort of design sensibility in that, you may play a 20-30 minute stretch without being able to save, which is great, except for when, well, I'll give you an example. There was a mission that I probably played through, I don't even know how many times. It was at least a dozen times. It was a couple hours of play, and it took me a long time to get through it. And basically what it was a multi-state. This is actually the last checkpoint in a mission. So missions are typically broken up into three big chunks. So you'll do a whole host of objectives in chunk one. Chunk two, you'll do a whole bunch of other stuff. There's usually a checkpoint between those. And then the third is like the finale of the level. Well, the finale of this level was I'm in my strike suit, which I'll digress a little bit. Strike suit is basically one of the ships you unlock, and you can transform it with the touch of a button into a basically mech, which acts like a hovering turret. So the effect on gameplay that has is you're flying around like you would in Wing Commander, hit a button, transform, and all of a sudden you're acting like a first-person shooter and you're in a mobile turret and you're basically, you know, decimating everyone within seconds.
And though not developed in Japan, it definitely pulls from an anime aesthetic for the art style.
In fact, they have the guy that did the design work for the actual strike suit is a famous mecha designer.
Okay.
He's working on, like, I looked, he worked on an Appleseed thing and like a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, it's, and actually ironically the strike suit is the best looking, I mean, as you would expect, it's the best looking ship in the game, not only because it's the most intricate, but it has the most moving parts.
Steam game up on PC, but you're playing it with a controller.
I am. Because because it's a space sim. Back in the day,
play with a flight stick, dude.
Well, yeah. I need to buy a flight stick. I have last flight stick I had was used for, you know, Free Space 2.
I'm saying that to support you. Like, you don't want to play with a mouse and keyboard. You want to play with as close to a flight stick as you can get.
Oh yeah,
and right now that's
so
a controller.
So you got the analog stuff. So the analog stuff is pretty important for this. It controls really well. Anyway, the point I was making about where things get sticky and the difficulty is this mission was the end of this mission, this last section of mission, which was probably a 20-minute chunk of gameplay, starts with you flying towards an enemy capital ship and your commander's like, okay, take out all the heavy cannons that are firing on your capital ship. So you take those out, and then it's like, okay, take out all the flat cannons on the ship. So, you know, meanwhile you're getting pelted, there's enemy fighters around. And you manage to survive that, and then your bomber wing, support wing, comes in, and they're supposed to bomb the crap out of the ship you just disabled. And what happened to me probably, I don't know, a dozen times or so, was that it got to the point where I was surgically taking apart the ship. I probably reduced my mission time to, you know, 5 to 7 minutes of totally decimating this capital ship because I'd done it so many times. And then my bomber wing would immediately come in and I'd shoot guys as fast as I could and do whatever I could. And they would die and the mission would end and I'd have to start the whole thing over again.
That gets frustrating.
And when I finally passed it, it still wasn't clear to me what I had done differently, tactically, you know, like what I would, if I, you know, shot something out, you know, a turret that was always blowing them up or whatever. But the bottom line was, it was sort of a frustrating experience. In particular, there were a few moments like that where missions I would, you know, hit a brick wall and then just pass them and not be clear as to why exactly that happened. Mm-hmm. That said, those are sort of the exception to the rule in the game. Super fun. I mean, the space combat is really colorful and there's a lot going on and the weapons are really fun to use. They have this really cool dynamic where you're use machine guns to take down guys' shields and then you switch to plasma cannons to take out their armor. And so it has this effect when you're, you know, sort of flying through space and everything's all chaotic where you're constantly toggling your, you know, using the D-pad to toggle your weapons. And end of the day, if you're looking for a space sim, or a space shooter combat sim, there really isn't a whole lot out there right now. And this is probably a pretty good bet if you don't mind a game that can feel a little unfair at times, in an old school way.
But, so what is the downside of turning into that robot mode?
You're not flying around, so you're sort of like a turret. You can still move left and right, and he'll do like dodges, and you can boost forward and stuff that uses your thrust meter. But you're a bit more vulnerable. So it's like you're there, and you can spin around and aim at all these enemies. Oh, and it's all based on a flux meter. So anytime you kill an enemy or blow something up, you gain flux. And when you transform into the strike suit, the flux meter starts to drain. So it's not like a powered mode that you can just constantly – I mean, it's usually like you have to kill a bunch of guys, turn into the strike suit, kill a whole bunch of other guys, turn back into your jet, blow up a couple of things, turn into the strike suit. It's all about positioning and stuff.
I'm like a hardcore X-Wing TIE Fighter fan, can I just stay in my spaceship mode the entire time?
You can. In fact, there's no requirement to transform. However, I will say that some of those dogfight battles, especially when you've got, I don't know, 36 enemy ships all flying around and, you know, you've got support fighters and stuff. But it gets to the point where it's super satisfying to get into a middle of a group of one of those things, transform and just mow everyone down, and then and then they start hitting you, and you transform back and turbo afterburner out of there. It's pretty satisfying, and I think they sort of gear the design and the difficulty towards really encouraging you to use it. So, but yeah, this got like 3 other ships that are pretty fun to fly to.
When you're talking about your setup, I was hoping you would say you play in a darkened room with a flight stick and just a red light bulb.
No, it wasn't a darkened room, and I had headphones on. The only thing I was missing was the flight stick. But again, I plan on rectifying that before Star Citizen comes out in 2 years.
In 2 years,
you're going to be set up for that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
be fun. We're playing Star Citizen and the new Zelda. It's going to be an awesome year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you stoked for – would you tell people to be stoked for Strike Suit or would you tell them to be
– I would say if you are a big fan of the genre like I am, it's sort of the best thing out there right now in terms of that experience.
Ringing endorsement.
Mitigated with some – no, I mean that moment that I described was – had I not been reviewing it, I might have, you know, snapped my controller in half and called it a day. And maybe that was part of the pressure was that I was – on a time deadline and trying to get through the mission and just couldn't see, you know, tactically, you know, but it doesn't do some of the things that other games that make you fly escort missions do better, which is give you a better heads up of where the guys you're supposed to be protecting are and all that sort of stuff. It does an okay job at that, but not great. So yeah, I know it doesn't sound like a glowing endorsement. It's very similar to your Devil May Cry. I enjoyed my time. I don't regret playing it at all. I think that, you know, like I said, if you're really dying for something in the space sim genre, it's more than competent. It's just it can be hard.
But it sounds like if you liked X-Wing or TIE Fighter, Free Space 2.
Yeah. And you can put yourself back in that headspace of, you know, I don't mind replaying the you know, same mission a bunch of times in a row until I get it right. Not all of them are like that. Like I said, it's only a few sticking points. But yeah, it definitely has that old school core sim space sensibility to it. So anyway, that's Strike Suit. I guess the only other game that I really want to call out is it's an iOS game that uses full motion video.
Oh, God. I can't wait to play this. You're telling me about this. I'm so excited.
Okay, so I'm going to describe this, and it is way, way better than it sound, that has any right to be. It is a full motion, it's called Brain Dex, and it's a for iPad only, as far as I know, and it's a full motion video trivia game.
DEX or DECKS?
DEX. Okay. Brain Dex. Right. Like Dexterity. Yeah. And it is a trivia based game show that is. The premise is, you know, this dude's driving around a U-Haul and he opens up the back of the U-Haul and he's got a couple of chairs in there and like a game show studio set up. And he basically asks trivia questions to random C, D, and E-list celebrities. So, you know, like Mike Tyson's one of the guys that they interviewed.
No, I mean, that's the punchline. The punchline is Mike Tyson.
Yeah,
that's the punchin' punchline.
Mike Tyson. And
Mike Tyson with the van broken down outside of Las Vegas, so it's shot inside his mansion, and yes. Mike Tyson answering trivia questions, and you have to race against Mike Tyson. It's like, are you smarter than, and in this case, it's like, are you smarter than Mike Tyson? And it's also like, are you smarter than random Venice dude from Muscle Beach?
Yeah,
and,
the pot consultant guy. Are you smarter than him? Or are you smarter than they had? Okay, so then they have a contestant like a real female or what she call herself?
Rhodes Scholar or something?
She's a human. She calls herself a human Barbie. So she's all dressed up.
Oh,
in this,
yeah, like that's crazy chick.
Human, but she has a master's in psychology or something. So you look at her and you're like, oh, this is gonna be easy. And then you're like, oh, okay, now I'm
in
going
her defense,
up against the.
So does Barbie.
Oh,
very educated doll.
Oh, okay, good, fair enough. All right, it's nice to have it all.
Hey, man, how do you else do you afford the?
The mechanic to this thing is that what they've done that's clever is they've matched the full motion video to a timer, and the timer is the measuring stick against which you must answer faster than
right.
the person.
So, is it timing the actual time it took them to come up with the answer?
Yeah.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
And so you're seeing it's not just who got it right, who got it wrong. It's did you answer faster? Did you answer right? They throw a couple. They have a.
It's not like the video plays and they pause and then a timer comes up on the screen.
No,
literally racing them how long it took
right.
them in real
they're,
life.
They're talking while he's like, oh man, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Like, that was the Barbie one, right?
Yeah, that was Barbie.
That was your Barbie impression.
Iron Mike Barbie.
That's just wrong on multiple levels.
So anyway, it's free. I have no idea how they're making money off this thing, but it's free.
Funny, neither do they.
Yeah, no ads. I mean, they say they're releasing episodes every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but when I downloaded it on release day, they already had like 9 episodes queued up, so you can just go through and play them to your heart's content. But my girlfriend and I we sat down and played through all 9 in one shot.
It's pretty crazy. Damn funny.
Yeah. I can't wait to check it out. I'm really excited.
It's pretty
about.
Damn funny.
Again, it's a lot better than it has any right to be or that it sounds. Because, I mean, I listen to myself describe it and I'm like, this is good? Yeah, it's good. So that's the only game I have to shill. I guess to sort of wrap up this.
I like how you called it shilling.
Oh. Well, it's not really shilling because I don't have any vested interest in it.
That's why I was giving you a hard time.
Okay, yeah. All right.
But talking about selling things.
Yes. THQ sold a bunch of stuff.
The auction results are in, ladies and gentlemen. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes.
They sold themselves. They're gone, right? They're dead. Bankrupt.
Yeah.
Kaput.
Toy headquarters gone.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it's all done. We got Crytek picking up Homefront. We got Sega picking up Relic.
You got to get into the subtext.
Crazy.
So Crytek making Homefront 2 as the developer buys out the IP for $500,000. So
expensive.
It's no. Like for $500,000 now, they own the Homefront IP. And I mean, obviously, like Crytek is getting almost to the stature where they can do their own thing. You know, they've got their big free to play first person shooter that's finally going to come into North America.
Which is crazy because they said at E3 last year that Crysis 3 was going to be their last paid title.
Well, things change, my friend.
Yeah, I guess they do.
When you can buy an IP for $500,000,
I guess.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, maybe they'll make it.
Cliffy's latest sports car costs more than that.
Fair enough. So, yes, we got that. The second one was, Relic was the big winner. or Sega was the big spender, rather.
And that's a great one there. Like, first of all, knowing what we know about Sega and the times that they've had over the last few years, where the hell did they come up with $26 million liquid cash to go buy Relic?
I'm telling you, it's all those gold rings. They're hanging on to them.
It's the underground Dreamcast market.
That's right.
They're pumping them out on the side.
Dreamcast was a huge success. You guys didn't know that? Dreamcast was a massive success. They just decided not to reinvest that money until now.
And you know U-Draw? Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
No.
But this actually could be, though, granted, somewhere that they had to come up with the money for it. This could be a very strong move for them, because if you think about one of the things that Sega has had in the last few years as a real bedrock foundation for them, it's Creative Assembly and the Total War series.
Yeah.
And that has been great games. They've backed the studio up really well. They've been like...
All the Games Workshop stuff's on there, too. Like all the Dawn of War stuff. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean...
So cool.
Space Marine. I mean, I'm excited about... a possible another Space Marine game.
So for fans of strategy games, this actually does set up a really strong corner for Sega of, hey, we have a really great commitment and presence to strategy in the PC space. And probably, yeah. I mean, obviously Relic has done stuff that's not PC based as well.
Yeah.
They did Space Marine, came out on console as well. So it gives them, I think that was a really good move for Sega. I don't know where they came up with the money for it. But if it keeps Relic making the games that we want them to be making and on target, I do think, I told Jeff this, I do think that this is, whatever the hangup has been, I do think that like the bailout is the point at which someone from Sega now can walk in the door at Relic and go, okay, we bailed you out. Yeah, get on that Homeworld thing.
Yeah. Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome?
No, for me, like Relic is definitely one of my favorite developers.
Oh, man.
Like, if you look at their RTS games, it's like they don't even look at other RTS games. They just make these things that are completely unique. They have these features that, you know, that a traditional RTS game just simply would never even dream of. And for me, it just makes them like... For me, I had to say, like, Coming Heroes has kind of, like, ruined other RTS games for me.
It certainly changed the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It's funny you should say that. I'm not huge on watching people play games. I could watch Sean Elliott play Company of Heroes for a long damn time. It was fascinating. Like, I've watched StarCraft matches, especially like at one up we toyed around with like covering some of that stuff. And so I've watched, you know, professional players play other real time strategy games, and those never had to me quite the appeal. Like watching Sean, like, I guess there's a lot of microing in there,
yeah,
which is something that StarCraft great players do as well. But there was just something about the Relic formula and the way battles could go back and forth that was just, it was really cool. Mm-hmm. It was a really cool game to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
And I always felt like I could not really, the only thing that ruined for me was because I've tried to play the game a couple of times and I've always like felt like, man, I'm not playing this game up to par. I should just quit.
So here's one of the funnier ones on, so Ubisoft was also a purchaser.
Yep.
And they picked up the South Park game, which makes sense, for $3.2 million.
It's goodbye.
Yeah,
and then
that's going to be an awesome game.
But here's the funny part. They picked up THQ Montreal for $2.5 million. And that also happens to be Patrice's studio.
Awkward.
So now he's back at Ubi again.
I wonder if he has to wait like a year and a day before he can...
I have a very good friend from high school that was working at THQ Montreal, and... I was talking to him yesterday and today about all this whole thing, and they literally just found out like they're all, or at least he is, moving over whole cloth to Ubi, to the point where, I mean, like there's no interruption in his pay. There's no interruption in his, they're just all moving over whole cloth. So.
See, I wonder.
Good.
That's good. That's great. Yeah.
I hope he's sort of smiling and going, oh, isn't life funny? As opposed to like, ah.
Well, I think that they were really scared for a while. They're like, do we have job? I mean, he just moved up to Montreal.
Dude, everybody in all those studios was.
Yeah.
They had to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad at least in this case, it, you know, didn't lead to disaster for everybody.
So there are a couple of other purchases. Take-Two bought both Take-Two just bought Evolve, which is Left 4 Dead developer, Turtle Rock's.
Rolling Dice.
Yeah. We don't know what it is, but it's Turtle Rock, so it's probably going to be good. Anyway, and then there was also Koch Media, which is, you know, the guys that own Deep Silver.
It's Deep Silver.
Yeah.
AKA Dead Island.
Yeah. So they bought, and this is probably personally the most troubling for me of the of all the purchases, all the acquisitions, is these two, $22.3 million for Volition, so you get the Saints Row stuff, and $5.8 million for Metro. I really like both of those franchises now, and I'm not very confident in Deep Silver.
I want to know, how did they get to these price points for these IP? You know, like how do you determine
same way
that?
Anyway, it is an auction. These were bankruptcy auctions. 3.2 million. 3.2 million.
$500.
Relics sold for.
Well, might have been sealed bids. I don't know exactly how that process worked, but I mean that's what it was. I mean, people put in bids of what they thought they were worth, and the one who had the highest bid took it.
Sega's probably like, "Fuck! Did we have to spend all that money?"
You know, like
it's crazy.
The saddest part is the no bid for Darksiders.
I know. It makes me a very sad panda. Because that is a great series.
But then, did you see the follow-up of Kamiya tweeting that Platinum Games would be interested in buying it and buying the studio as well if they could get them on the cheap? That broke my brain.
I'd buy them if I could get them on the cheap.
Yeah. I just bought them.
On the cheap. On the cheap.
How about the promise? How about the promise of a Darksiders, which had great exploration, great Zelda and overworld and adventuring with the combat expertise of a Bayonetta?
That's great. I never found the combat lacking in Darksiders.
I'm not saying it was lacking, but how about combining those two?
That would be awesome. I mean, if you could keep the Zelda puzzling and the Bayonetta, like, fast.
Dark Sayonetta?
Yeah, I'm down. Sign me up.
Bayosiders?
You laugh. I think it could be awesome. I would love to see some way for that to come into fruition. I don't know how it does because I think the auction process ended, but you know, maybe there's some way for them to salvage that, you know, post courtroom. I don't know. It would be I think that would be a tremendously cool potential project.
So do you guys have any personal like excited or dread for any of these purchases?
I think it doesn't necessarily mean anything for anything, you know what I mean? It's not like just because this thing is going to someplace else doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be any.
No, I think most of these things worked out pretty well, and then we'll just have to wait and see.
My question is like, what happens to for example, the WWE license?
So it's come out afterwards.
The Nickelodeon stuff.
Well, the Nickelodeon stuff is dead, but I think the WWE license. There was discussion that that's going to 2K.
Mm, that's good.
They should combine those two: the Nickelodeon and the WWE licenses.
Yeah.
Kid wrestling.
Yeah. All right. On that note, let's go to finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Jeff Cannata, how about you start off?
Well, it occurred to me that when we were talking about Nintendo, I left out the coolest thing that I was doing backflips for. If anybody out there ever saw the last time we did the Totally Rad Show 24-hour gaming marathon, you will know that I have a very deep love in my heart for Kirby, the yarn version of Kirby. What was that game called?
Epic Yarn.
Which was awesome. I agree. I liked it quite well, too.
The fact that we're getting a Yoshi yarn Yoshi, I'm so happy about. I hope yarn versions of all of the Nintendo characters happen. I want Yarn to be its own, like, spin-off series. Metroid Yarn would be awesome!
You get, like, a sewing machine attachment. And
make Yarn games forever.
You collect bobbins.
Yeah.
Donkey Yarn, you know?
Donkey Yarn?
You know, like Donkey Kong Yarn.
Oh.
I'm just trying to make Kong sound like Yarn.
Sorry, that just sounded like a euphemism.
Yonky Kong Yarn? Mario Kart Yarn. Do it. Just make it all Yarn. Because it's awesome. It's a great aesthetic. And in HD, it's going to be even better. That's my finishing move, fuckers.
I like the fabric of your argument, Jeff.
It's full of whimsy. I love the whimsy of it.
All right, moving right along. Brandon, we'll just move right to you.
I've been playing Skulls of the Shogun. And this kind of thing's coming out on the 30th. And I am totally loving it. It is a strategy game for, I believe, Xbox, Windows 8, and Windows Phone. And, console RTS games are kind of a tough sell for me because a lot of times I'm like the guy who's constantly overshooting my target or I'm sending my guys to a completely wrong area of the map. And what they do with this game is that it's a very, you know, turn-based squad-based small tactics game, kind of has some similarities to Advance Wars, and it kind of does RTS things that I strategy things that I like, which is like hard counters, you know, interesting tactics, interesting units that have special abilities. Like it kind of reminds me a lot of these Company Heroes, where your units can be used in a very specific way, in a very hard counter, but also extremely soft in very specific ways. So I am totally playing this game and really, really liking it.
Awesome. Jake will be super glad to hear that. My good friend Jake Hasdahl worked on it with his 17-bit studio that he formed, and coming out soon, and of course, Plan B doing the PR and marketing for that as well.
Rest assured, we will be talking about it lots next week.
Yeah.
Jeff Mattis, what you got to finish him with?
I will also briefly echo Brendan's finishing move and say that I am also enjoying Skulls of the Shogun immensely. I will have a review up after it launches. So there's that. But I also wanted to give a shout out to, I guess, a couple of other iOS titles that I've been playing that are really good. One is Wave Trip, which is a... It's like a sort of a procedural music endless runner deal. It kind of plays like Whale Trail does. If you ever played that, it's, you know, sort of similar mechanically, but you're – and it's got this cubist art style that's really weird and colorful, and you're basically collecting stuff as you go through the level to free your quote-unquote friends, and it's sort of generating the soundtrack dynamically as you play. Really cool. The other one is Wide Sky, which I think is only available for iPhone and iPod Touch right now. I don't think there's a universal version yet. It's amazing art style. It's sort of like construction paper based, very, very cool, old school. And it involves ropes and hedgehogs and swinging them around and attaching them to clouds, and uses the gyroscope as a control method. And it's really bizarre and fun and weird, and I'm still figuring it out. But I had to mention it because it's...
Say the names again of those.
Wave Trip and Wide Sky.
Wide Sky. Yes. I think that's a good name. Hey, I'm going to quickly just touch on this X-Surface hoax that came up this week. If you're unfamiliar with it, a social experiment, or I guess media reporting experiment, was executed by... I forget who... I don't have a guy's name written down. Basically, if you can
Is it Toya Sosopo?
Yes. It's very. It is sort of funny that would come up. If you go to x-surface.tumblr.com, you can see the entire thing laid out. I'm not going to get too deep into it. Just basically, this person using some Microsoft credentials leaked a faked document on the X Surface as the future of the next Xbox, and wanted to see how quickly that spread around the internet, and then drew a lot of conclusions about how poorly executed games reporting is done based off of that. And there's one small problem with this.
None of the big sites picked it up.
Yeah. None of the big sites picked it up, although some of them did in the echo chamber. And secondarily, the person who created the fake actually had a reasonably believable story with a reasonably believable set of Microsoft-looking credentials. And as we're heading up to E3 and everybody is dying and itching to get information on the boxes, there are going to be leaks, and there's going to be a number of times that leads like this come out, because there are going to be people who want to talk about, you know, the hardware for whatever reason. You know, there's always that sort of thing. It's no different than any other industry where people inside an industry leak a story. And it's not bad reporting to, if a story lead or a leak or a rumor appears to be genuine, report it. It's bad reporting not to follow up on it. And so the reality, you know, here is that if this all looked very genuine on the surface and it comes to the news desk, then the news desk's job is to immediately begin investigating that, see, you know, reach out to both, you know, wherever it came from and to whatever it's regarding to, so in this case Microsoft, and say, hey, here's what we have, here's what's being reported, and then from there use their best judgment as to whether or not there's validity to it. I mean, come on, if this was true and you went to Microsoft, it's not a given that they would say no comment. They might deny it outright. It still might be legit. I think that this rush to throw games reporting under the bus when someone intentionally goes out of their way to mislead people and makes it look very real is, I mean, you're going to get that. Of course you're going to get that response. You know, if someone worked inside of a hospital and wanted to create a misleading story about medical technology, there would be a number of news organizations that would run that while they were going out and doing the investigation, because it would be a reasonably valid accusation. So easy there, Tiger. Like, yeah, if you go out and create a fake story like this and you're adept enough to create a very good looking fake story, then you'll probably get some people to bite on it.
And it ended up not being true, Yasusopo.
Yeah, and it ended up not being true. And like you said, no, you know, most of the major sites didn't run it because what most of the major sites did was they started looking into it and they're like, there's nothing around this to give it any validity. But I think that it'd be cautious because you know what's going to happen. Like between now and E3, there are going to be stories. They're going to be rumors. They're going to be stories. And we were talking about this last night. I think it's going to be really hard to get to E3 without something about the two hardware pieces coming out. I mean, because there's so many.
I mean, look at Sony's history with keeping stuff quiet before E3.
Well, and Microsoft.
It's not good.
Well, I mean, hardware is tough because there's so many. You have to be communicating right. with so many developers and so
companies,
many people.
And hardware manufacturers and different component part makers. And yeah, it gets crazy. And you're right. And you're trying to create all these launch titles and to keep it quiet. And it's just.
I think it's one thing to keep a piece of software quiet, but there are so many different pieces, as you noted then. You know, the other side of it is technology. Like they have to go out and get manufacturing contracts.
Look at how hard it is for Apple to keep stuff quiet. You know, it's like you can't. Nobody can.
So, yeah. And look at how many unverifiable and actually usually wrong rumors come up around Apple stuff.
True that.
And it's because people are eating it up. So I appreciate.
And to be honest, it's kind of the fun.
Well,
it's kind of the fun. Like, I get you don't want to.
News reporting isn't meant to be fun.
No. Well, yes, but. Yes, but it's also fun to speculate.
It's fun to be on a forum and speculate,
right.
But if you're reporting something is.
No,
news,
I'm not
going to
disagree with
grounding
that. I'm not going
to
disagree with that. Also, I'm not a journalist.
And I think that on the whole, because it wasn't. I looked at, like, it was definitely echo boxed, and that is a huge problem, is the echo box effect. And there is no doubt that the seed of the X-Surface hoax was rooted in a real problem of not enough research being done on stories. But in this case, I think that because it was, you know, reasonably real looking, and because it came with Microsoft backing and, like, you know, address for email and all that kind of stuff, that I understand why someone would have jumped on it, but that. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of this stuff going on, and so they just be vigilant and think about what you're
reading. And anything has to be taken with a grain of salt and reported with a grain of, you know, this is unsubstantiated, that's...
We received a report of this. We have reached out to Microsoft and ATI and whoever else.
To clarify what I was saying, I enjoy reading the Apple rumors. I enjoy reading the console rumors. I enjoy even when they're wrong. It's fun to think, oh, what if that was what if it is a solar powered iPhone? What if, you know? What if it is a, you know, completely voice based console?
Part of the stupid fun is like when they start getting these rumors from like people who make peripherals, and they're like, well, the measurements for the new case are this by this. So what if the new phone looks like this because of that? It's like, okay, whatever.
But it's just silly entertainment anyway. I get there's a distinction between that and news. Don't jump down my throat. Everyone in the world.
That would be a very big throat.
Wow.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Of course, huge thanks to Brendan and Blendo Games. Anything you would like to have people follow you on Twitter? Come by, buy a game. Say hi.
I'm at Blendo Games on Twitter.
And buy his games. They're freaking awesome. Jesus.
Thank you.
I really do love Adam Zombie Smasher. If you haven't ever played Adam Zombie Smasher, it's really cool.
You need to play some Flotilla, too.
I do need to play some Flotilla.
Good stuff.
I actually bought it on Steam a long time ago after watching
it. It's also one of the best things on... It's on XBLIG, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah.
Yep. It's on the XBLIG.
Man, that's so hard to find, though. It's like,
I agree.
Yeah.
I wish we could... Can you link to that in the Xbox web space? Like, you know, you go to like Xbox.com? Do they have like entries for the games there? Or is that only
Xbox? Yeah, there's a link there.
We should figure that out. We'll figure that out, and we'll get that in the show notes as well.
Cool.
Jeff Cannata at Jeff Cannata on Twitter.
Two N's, one T.
Also going to Barcelona soon for his web show that you should be watching with him and Molly Wood.
Yeah, always on CNET.
So there you go. Check that out. Jeff Mattis, of course, at Jeff Mattis. Also on Shaq News. Also on Indie Games Channel.
Damn straight.
And you can read our latest game of the year. Oh, and if you have an iPad, an iPhone, or an Android device, you should download the new GameCube.
Oh, yeah.
Issue 3 is out now. It has an interview with Ken Levine. Cover story is BioShock Infinite. Hmm. We've got a side-by-side between Hawken and MechWarrior.
Wow.
We've got a cool story on pain and avoidance psychology and game mechanics. We got a bunch of good stories in there.
Sounds it's like an awesome...
Another good issue.
Sounds like an awesome thing.
And it's free.
And you can read it on your iPhone this time, too.
It's yeah, that was the delay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the delay, if you were curious why we had a little delay there, was we were getting our iPhone version trim and proper. We wanted to make sure it came out at the same time. So there you go. Thanks very much. That's your Weekend Confirmed. By the way, I was not owing anything last week on the tailgate. No
there's
tailgate
been
this
some.
Week.
There's been some errors with the reporting.
Why?
Well, this week I was supposedly 0-1-1. Yeah, he switched it because I made a stink. I picked the freaking Raven. I picked the Harbowl to happen.
Right. I did too. Like, we both picked the Ravens. You said you were going Ravens, and I was like, you're going to be upset because I was picking the Ravens too. So,
yeah,
there you
no,
go.
I did.
And you picked my Niners, and you would not believe the number of tweets I got when we were down 17-0. People are like, Garnet did this to you. Garnet did it to you.
I couldn't
do like,
anything to you.
I got faith, Betty.
I couldn't do
faith.
Anything to
I'm
you.
A 49 team, faithful.
Teams play how they play. But, next week, Nicole
Thanks
will be
Thanks for clearing
here.
That up. The metaphysics wizard, Garnet Lee.
Team with
clearing
the most
up
points.
That he had no actual influence in the game.
I'm gonna smack him.
Teams, actually, there's teams on the field that determine the outcome of that game, everybody. I had no magical powers.
You're son of a bitch, Kanata.
One devilishly funny son of a bitch.
But better yet, next week, Nicole will be here.
Ah, and Super Bowl.
Perfect timing. She'll be able to give us... We might even just give her a segment.
We should just give her the whole 2 hours to, like, just break it down.
Break down the whole... All right, that's it. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard.
For me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the GameFly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the GameFly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.